Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com, Amazon, and select retailers nationwide.
Trust no one and accuse everyone. And Who's the Bad Guy? The official Barstool Sports social deduction game from the brilliant mind of Nick Tirani. In what's quickly becoming the most popular new party game around, players are secretly assigned unique roles, with the good guys trying to expose the bad guys and the bad guys doing everything they can to stay hidden. Each game unfolds under alternating day and night phases, with roles like the cool chick, the shy guy, the gambler, El Presidente, the mentalist, the planner, the funny guy, and more. Every round is unpredictable, chaotic, and ridiculously fun. Who's the Bad Guy is great for parties, pre-games, family gatherings, or groups who just love deception-based games. Game night will never be the same. Shop now on Walmart.com.
All right, on this episode of Project Big Screen, we have an interview with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck from The Rip. The Rip movie we're also reviewing this episode, as well as a list of top 10 best performances from Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Who ends up on the list more? List of reviews of 20 Years Later, The Bone Temple, sequel to last year's 20 Years Later, and some other news and notes, including Star Wars, Golden Globes roundup, some talk about the Oscars, and much more. All that coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 16, January 18th, middle of the month, middle of typically the worst month for movies, but I would say not so fast. Wag that finger, Chris Klemmer.
Klemmer, can I get another wag finger?
That's pretty. Yeah. I mean, hey, this is not your normal January right now. Don't get me wrong. There's a movie. I don't know if we all saw it, but I know Klemmer and I did that. We'll talk about that. Was a bit, definitely a bag of assholes, as some might say, as a stinker. But two of them are pretty good. We got to talk about The Rip. 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, one of the quickest turned around sequels you'll ever see. I also think that the third, because it's a trilogy, they've said, is going to be not too far out. And then Greenland 2 Migrations, we'll talk about very lightly. We also have a huge interview today. Ken Jack and Gooch got to talk to Matt Damon, Ben Affleck from The Rip. So we have that interview later on after we talk about the movie. We're gonna trash the movie and call them dummies, and then they're gonna interview them.
I'll do my best.
luckily one of those movies where it's like, oh, thank God it's not a complete bag of shit.
Well, let me tell you, Jeff, I was so nervous when I pressed play on Netflix.
Trailers, Golden Globes. We'll do a very, very quick recap of the Golden Globes. One programming note, we're gonna do, in honor of Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, we're gonna do their best performances. We're going to combine them, though. We'll see who gets on the list more than the other. We will be doing something on Thursday morning, January 22nd. I don't know what yet, but we'll do a reaction to the Oscars on this channel. The Oscar nominations coming out on Thursday. We'll do a little table set of that at the end when we talk about the Golden Globes as well, which has almost no impact on the Oscars, but there's two races that typically can be viewed as mild predictors. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but let's start out with The Rip. A group of Miami cops discovers a stash of millions in cash, leading to distrust as outsiders learn about the seizure, making them question who to rely on. A lot of money at stake here in this crime thriller directed by Joe Carnahan, who has done a slew of movies over the years. Some people like him, some people don't. He did one last year, which was god-awful, doesn't really describe it. Shadow Force.
I liked it more than you did. It wasn't good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, not a good. Yeah. It was not well-received across the board.
No, it was not.
put it that way.
I'm probably
The Gray, also The A-Team, a movie that I don't think is very good, but I somehow have like fond memories of just because of like what it is. Like, it's not, like, I don't think The A-Team's very good, but it's like a fun enough stupid time. But he's back for this one, hour and 43 minutes long, released only on Netflix, not in theaters. Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Steven Yeun, Tiana Taylor, Sasha Kale, Scott Adkins, Kyle Chandler, Nestor Carbonell, one of my favorite small actors.
Oh, face.
He actually saw recently. You so if you don't know that name, you might know him. He's in a bunch of random stuff, but I think of like the most popular movie he's in, probably The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. He actually recently mentioned how people say, "Are you wearing eyeliner?" Because that is like he's got those very distinct like eyelashes. He also has Ken Jekyll Elvis, a fantastic role in The Morning Show.
Oh, great.
As with most like roles in that show, he is both a villain and a hero. They can't ever really decide who is good and who is bad. He's in this very briefly. 83 and 70% split around Tomatoes, 6.9 IMDb, 64 Metacritic, 3.2 Letterboxd. We'll start with Ken Jack. What did you think of The Rip and what score did you give it?
So I think that this movie is like to me, the most 65 out of 100 movie that's ever existed. To me, it's like the most like whatever the Mendoza line is for Netflix movies. Like this is like just there, like right above like what you like expect, I think, because their expectations, I would say, are typically kind of lower. I think there's things that does right and there's things that does wrong. I like the story. I like most of the dialogue and the action. I just think there's like little execution things and creative decisions that I don't think totally work. But they're very little things that would take it this from being like, oh, yeah, that was a fun time of a movie, to having like the sort of like cult like fascination that you get with a movie like Den of Thieves. Like that's what I wanted this movie to be. Like after watching the trailers and stuff, I'm like, I want this to be Den of Thieves, like a movie that like you talk about with your boys, like, oh, you've seen Den of Thieves? Like as a fun fucking boy, a dude's rock action movie or something like that. That's what I wanted from this. I don't think it gets there. But it's definitely like right above that Mendoza line. I want to get into more specifics, but I think that we can probably get into more of that a little bit later. But I'm at a solid 65 out of 100 for The Rip.
Gooch, what'd you give it?
Yeah, Kenjack, if you saw me laugh when you gave your score, it's because I also gave this a 65. You're right. This is the most 65 out of 100 movie that I think I've seen in quite a while. It really doesn't reinvent the wheel. And like I said, Jeff, I was a little nervous going in because these big budget action movies that Netflix pumps out are hitting at such a low rate. And I think it's because they try to do way too much. This doesn't. This has an all-star cast and it plays into that. It's really just Damon and Affleck. There are a lot of other big players on the board, but it's Damon and Affleck running like a two-man weave the whole way through. And their chemistry is just so good. They know how to play off of each other brilliantly. So it doesn't try to do too much. Lets them shine. And then the other part that I really like in Damon and Affleck, stick around for the interview. I hope you do, because they talk about the back end of making this movie, which I think is just a really, really, really awesome thing. And I try not to let the behind the scenes stuff affect the scoring of a movie, but this is going in the positive direction. I would love to see more movies do what they do here. So 65 out of 100. Good time. I was pleasantly surprised.
Clemmer.
Yeah. Make this three in a row. This is absolutely no way. A 65 out of 100 movie. This is like, I'm recommending this movie, but this is like the most mildest recommendation I can make, if that makes any sense. This movie is just so bizarre to me. It's, you know, that meme of the Porsche and trailer park? Like, that's what this is. You have an unbelievable cast. Like, literally, all-star cast. And not even all-star in, like, fame, but all-star in talent. Like, these are really talented actors and actresses that you love seeing in movies. In this movie that you kind of feel like they're, like, slumming it. I'm not a Joe Carnahan fan. I think he makes a lot of poor choices in previous movies he's done and this movie. But I have to recommend this because the acting is so good. Like you said, like Agooch, like this is like Damon and Affleck, just watch them on screen together. That's worth the price of admission. Obviously it's Netflix, but this is worth the price of your time. So I walked away entertained, but I wish I walked away wanting so much more when you look at the talented roster this movie has. And so I walked away both entertained and disappointed, if that makes any sense. But yeah, absolutely, you guys are dead on. 65 was what I said when I was thinking about this movie. It's funny, we all have exactly the same score.
Come on, Jeff.
No, I'm higher than you guys, 69 out of 100. I enjoyed it. Nice. I enjoyed it quite a bit. When it actually seems like most people that I follow on Letterboxd, but kind of have it in that range, like 3, 3.5 stars. There's look, this movie's at its best with, I think, when it's Damon and Affleck, when it's them together. They do a nice job with misdirection, but I think not overworking the misdirection too, like kind of leading you there without, because like I do think as fun as, you know, the, I'll use a Matt Damon movie, Ocean's 11 type reveals are, I think sometimes it's good to lead you to water a little bit so it doesn't seem convoluted and you kind of buy into it and then reveal other things as it happens. And I think the way they had the structure of the story play out worked great for me. My only real complaint was I think they stuck around in certain settings too long. I think that'd be the only thing. I think there's, it's unfortunate for me to put a movie in a place like Miami that has such a vibrant, incredible look to it and stay in one space, which is very dreary and dull.
Just a suburb.
Yeah. Which is fine. It, like that, whatever, it works. But I do wish they could have expanded the scope of the movie a little more. And they do at some points, but that'd be kind of my biggest complaint, that it feels a little bogged down in kind of the middle section. But I was mostly worried how the story played out. That'd be the thousand thing. I was like, I feel like this thing could be goofy and stupid and like just like real dumb, and it never hit that point for me. Thought it was well cast for the most part. I didn't have any really eye roll moments, which I also expected to have. I figured to have plenty of eye roll moments, didn't really have them. It just reminds me that these two should probably be in more movies together. They're for a reason very natural chemistry wise and good together. So yeah, I enjoyed it. 69 out of 100. It's far from perfect. I wouldn't call this a, you know, you're not slamming this script down on the table saying, wow, oh buddy, like this is, you're not putting this on your coffee table. But for what it is and for what it wants to be, it knows what it is. And had a decent enough time. I might even be a little unfair to that score too. That could be a thing that I watch again. Like I would watch this again and bump up. So. Yeah, 69. We're all kind of in the same range. We'll spoil it now. It's on Netflix. Go check it out. Good. The movie looked good too, by the way. It didn't look like a cheap streaming movie.
Yeah, but it didn't look like a movie that should have Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in it.
It didn't look like, relative to Netflix expectations, yeah, I would say it may as well have been like a fucking, yeah, Terrence Malick.
Clemmer, that's more me saying the bar was on the floor, right? Like it didn't stop. Like, I mean, I guess I watch a lot of streaming movies, but there's times where you're like, oh boy. And I don't think I ever hit that with this movie.
But think about The Instigators.
Yeah.
From last year, two years ago, produced by them, Apple TV streaming movie, probably very similar budget. That looked atrocious, atrocious. And maybe that's why they stayed in that one spot for so long. That was probably their cheapest location. Easiest thing to do.
Yeah. This kind of felt at times cheap to me, and like cheap compared to like who was involved in this movie. Like that whole second act, we're at the house the whole time, and it even make fun of the house. Like, this house looks like shit. Like, it's a dumpy house. It's like a shitty garage, a dumpy house. And I'm like, why are all these great actors in the, agree to do this movie? Like, it was weird.
It never looked cheap to me, but I if it makes sense, I agree with you in like a weird offshoot way of, like I said before, it felt small.
Yes.
That was sort of my, which is never, I'm not saying that's always a bad thing. I'm not saying this needs, you know, you don't need fucking portals opening up and Casey Affleck's popping. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, a huge thing, but it could have been, I don't know. I just think it could have used the landscape a little more. So the,
like, white bad boys. Like, yeah, I thought we were going that direction at one point.
Yeah. Now I'd seen the trailer enough and I saw the behind the scenes when they at the, what's the Netflix thing? Ta-dum. Their big upfront, yeah, which, remember, that's the
shout out
to Kevin Spacey. That's him doing the fucking ring on the desk. Insane that that's what that is still. I'll never get over that. The movie gets twisty. So anyway, I knew what the movie would look like. I knew it was going to be fucking Miami Vice. Like, I knew they were going to be in white suits rolling out, you know, in neon synthwave. But the movie gets a little twisty. We're spoiling it. You are introduced early to a character from Kyle Chandler, who ends up being the big bad, along with the Steven Yeun character. Now, I want to ask before we get into what exactly happens, who was your guest? Did you know? They try to make it seem like Matt Damon's character is corrupt and all that. And I think it's pretty clear he's not going to be. I think that's pretty obvious. But it was enough misdirection. Was there a guest that you had that wasn't Kyle Chandler? Did everyone think it would be Kyle Chandler?
Oh, the second Kyle Chandler rolled up, I was like, bad guy. That's bad guy right there.
It took the two most famous for being likable actors and just made them the bad guys. Like, everyone loves Steven Yeun from Walking Dead. Everyone loves Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights. And, like, we'll just make them the bad guys.
I do think that one of the things that did do well, though, is they built up a few scenes where you almost second guess it. Because if you're in your head, you're thinking, no way, it's them. Like, the scene where Matt Damon, like, trails Steven Yeun and he's, like basically interrogating him. And, like, you turn around and he's just, like, kind of staring at him. Like, you feel that the tension was there, for sure. And, like, you second guess yourself as an audience member, which I thought that was kind of smart. At least, well put together.
There were certain parts where I also thought Sasha Colley's character was somehow involved in some sort of criminal doings, but then that kind of goes away. I mean, it was pretty obvious from the jump that it was going to be Kyle Chandler and Steven Yeun.
I like the thing which I said in the beginning. I like that they basically told you and showed you how that Steven Yeun was in on it. Because I do think, that was my worry with this movie. I'm like, are they just not going to show you and they're going to be like, they're gonna do this dumb reveal? It always reminds me of it's very niche reference in the movie Role Models, that the nerdy guy, like the dorky guy, tells that campfire story and he's like, and it was Trevor, the pizza delivery guy from the beginning of the movie. And I'm always like, that anytime that happens in a movie, you're like, Jesus Christ, like, what, who, why? I was worried we were gonna get that, and I like that they kind of led you to UN and they kind of tell you, it makes you, like Ken Jack said, second guess maybe a little bit. But the pieces are there where it all tied together fine, which was a big thing for me, because I was like, I would have bet the house this movie would have been had a stupid reveal at the end of it. I'd have been like, this, come on. Like, it'd have been like the partner of Affleck's character's brother from the beginning of the movie. You're like, what the fuck? So I like that enough. I thought the reveal of that it was Kyle Chandler behind it all, and they're going for the money, and Matt Damon led people astray, gave different numbers and stuff. I thought it all played out nicely, because I assume that would have been a disaster. That was my guess.
Affleck's brother looked just like Affleck. That was great casting.
Scott Adkins. He's one of the.
Did anyone else think it? Did anyone else know right away? Because they don't mention it right away. I was like, that look. I go, that looks like he's just like Affleck.
I was annoyed. I'm like, why would you cast someone that looks just like Ben Affleck?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great cat. That was a great call on their part. They look perfect together. Like he's like the grizzled brother and like the buttoned up brother.
That actually reminds me of one of my issues with it, which I'm curious if you guys agree. I think this movie had too many like characters. You know what I mean? Like, I think when you have a police movie or police show, you can't all be the kooky one. Like, you can't all be the weirdo or like the off kilter, not buttoned up guy. Like, you need, I think in my head anyway, with police stuff, you need a lot of straight laced guys and a few oddballs, like guys that are going against the grain. You can't all be that. And I feel like this cast, like their main group of cops, they were all that.
Yeah, they tried to stress hard, like, this, we're TNT, like we're the misfits. Like, that's what they tried to really stress.
Like, they're all like, I'm not your regular cop. Like, I think at least like 50% of them should be regular cops. Like, the rest of them can be the weirdos, but like, you need to be a little bit more normal.
I also didn't buy that they were all like this tight unit. I know they tried to establish that when they're all like just sitting in a garage and fold up chairs, but like, that didn't really do it for me. I didn't really believe the camaraderie, because the second they get to that house, no one's trusting anybody.
Like, yeah.
You can tell there's just amazing amount of mistrust. So that kind of like makes it so like, all right, so they're not that tight after all. I don't. I'm kind of flabbergasted that these people agree to do this script.
It's like five Oscar nominees on the cast.
And they read that script and they're like, this is the movie we're going to spend our time doing. And then we're going to have Joe Carnahan direct it. I just don't understand.
I mean, I guess if Damon and Affleck go on first, right? And you're like, hey, you want to come do a cop movie with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck? They're like, yes.
Sure. But why would Damon and Affleck agree to it?
They're boys with Carnahan. Well, I
know Affleck did Smoking Aces back in the day.
Yeah,
but like, I just don't understand. But I mean, whatever. It was fun enough.
Another thing that annoyed me, and I don't know if you guys agree with this also, but one thing it kind of erupted or disrupted the flow was every time they would like have some insane gunfight, whatever, like someone just gets shot, whatever, like, all right, time to go count the money again. Like, that to me, yeah, like, was very frustrating. To
when
the
she was counting like, the money after getting shot, I was like, what the fuck? I guess she...
Like, you guys are under siege. Like, this should be like warfare, for example. Like, when you're stuck in this tight quarters thing, but imagine warfare, but none of the guys trust each other. Like, that is a very compelling thing, but when you stop what you're doing to like what should be one of the scary situations you think of, just like, all right, time to count more money. It's like that. I don't know. Just that frustrated me a little bit.
You know what would have been great? If Ben Affleck just pulled a pair of like little glasses out of his back pocket and put them on.
Christian?
It's like the accountant shows up. He just looks at the stack.
Oh, it's all tied in.
That's $32 million. Yeah.
Starts talking all weird.
But Chris, when you say like, why would they do this? Have you considered that like maybe Ben and Matt just like wanted to do like a buddy cop movie? Like, and Netflix gave them the bag to make it. Like,
is a better buddy cop script out there. There wasn't a better cop.
I don't know. I think what Gooch said is the key there. Was there an easy green light from somewhere just to do it and make it happen and not have to jump through hoops and do a bunch of bullshit? That I get.
Now, they also produced this, right? So, like, maybe that they got, you know, Netflix gave them, you know, an offer they kind of couldn't refuse from that end of it. And it's like, all right. Like,
it's a very cool deal.
Yeah.
They helped the cast out. Ben is much more well-spoken than any of us, and he'll break it down in our interview. But basically, it's like it's kind of like a profit sharing, or I don't know how to really put it into words, but everyone on the cast, not just the above the line, but the below the line, the caterers, the grips, the best boys, the electricians, everyone. If it hits certain numbers, everyone gets a bonus. Like, that's very cool. Everyone.
1,200 people.
Awesome.
In that crew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think very there's cool. also probably an interest, and these two have done a ton of interviews in the last week or so. I think there's probably there's a clear interest from these guys in the industry in streaming, and these two have not been on a lot of things on platforms, and I assume there's an attraction there to maybe try and like figure it out and do it the right way, and I don't know, I could see that as well. So yeah, I think it's enjoyable and knows what it is, and I think for what it is, it's good. Now I don't go and expect anything. I think unbelievable, but like it's a good time. I enjoyed watching it, and honestly, if it was on again somewhere, and I'd probably keep, like, it was fun enough.
Mm-hmm. And every time they're on screen together, it's
it
rocks. It's really good. This that's what you get for like 40 plus years of chemistry or whatever. You just get like that incredible back and forth between them. They're really, really good.
It just feels so natural, like even if the setting and the stuff going on is so bizarre around them, just like having those in a room makes it so much more grounded.
Do you think this would be better if it was Boston, and or would that be just doing the town again?
Yeah, it's better to be somewhere basically. Else.
Yeah, that is a tough thing. Is that you're always just infringing on.
You could have had this in Omaha, though. Like, you didn't need to have this in Miami. Like Jeff said, like, you're not really using Miami.
Well, it's a true story, Chris.
Yeah, it is.
They really did this. There's no way this is a true story, right?
Heavily embellished.
Did anyone Google if it's good to be a snitch in South Florida? I was like, do you really get that much money for being a snitch? It's kind of fascinating.
Was it 20% of the haul or something? Yeah. Like, what the fuck, dude?
4 million.
I'd be on top of that in a second. It's crazy.
We all enjoyed it. Good enough time. Don't expect to have your fucking doors blown off by it. You're not gonna go running out and being like, this has staying power for the year. Like, it's not that, but it's a good time. And I if you like this kind of buddy cop and you like Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, I think definitely check it out. Give it a watch. That is The Rip on Netflix now. Next up, 28 years later, The Bone Temple. Dr. Kelson, played by Ralph Fiennes, who's in the last one, finds himself in a shocking new relationship with consequences that could change the world as he knows it. While Spike, who's kind of more of a backseat compared to the last one, while Spike's played by Alfie Williams, encounter with Jimmy Crystal, who was a character you saw at the end of the last movie, played by Jack O'Connell, based on the media English media personality Jimmy Savile. Look that story up if you want to fuck a wild story, real piece of shit. While Spike's encounter with Jimmy becomes a nightmare he cannot escape. Very different type of movie than the last one. Hour and 42 minutes long, directed by Nia DaCosta, who did Candyman, The Marvels, and Hedda. Hedda was a movie last year which had a very good performance from
Tessa Thompson.
But I did not think the movie was very good. Written by Alex Garland, the busiest man in Hollywood. He wrote 28 Years Later last year. He wrote and directed Warfare, co-directed Warfare, I believe.
Yep.
I think that's maybe the right term.
Yeah.
Civil War. Long before that, Annihilation, Ex Machina. Alex Garland, clearly one of the best in Hollywood at like these types of genres, war, sci-fi. Like, he is a Swiss Army knife, and he kind of
good stuff, we call it.
he kind of puts out only good shit. Like, he kind of, like, his like low bar is pretty fucking high, and he's clearly one of the best working writers in Hollywood right now and can kind of write anything. The fact that you can do an Ex Machina, something as deep as Annihilation, do two like war movies, do these, like, it's impressive. Sequel to 20 Years Later from last year. There's apparently going to be a third. I think that makes sense. If you watch it, you know that. We will not spoil one key part of this. I think Danny Boyle's back for that one. Ralph Fiennes, Jack O'Connell, Alfie Williams, as I mentioned, did not perform at the box office well. $15 million below expectations, which were like 2022. They're projecting 15 for the four-day weekend. 93-89 split around Tomatoes, 7.8 IMDb, 81 Metacritic, Letterboxd 4.0. People like this movie. Clemmer, what did you give 20 Years Later, The Bone Temple? And what did you give, in context, I think everyone throw in where you place it with last year's, with 20 Years Later.
Yeah, I enjoyed last year's. I thought last year's was a good movie. I probably would have had that like around, I don't know, 80, 81. Somewhere in there. I had this as like an 84. I really like this movie. I thought it was fantastic. It's my favorite movie of the series, even more than the original, which I liked a lot, especially the first half.
Wow.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. It had a lot of heart to it. Ralph Fiennes' character is fantastic and unusual. This is such a weird movie. Like, I'm kind of like shocked it got made, just because it's like doesn't follow any sort of genre formula that you used to. Yes, it's zombies, but it's such a different look at kind of how the world would go on after. Like, having it be 28 years later does give such a weird perspective on how people would lose their mind. Jack O'Connell, great performance. What's the kid's name? Alfie Williams. He's very good in the last movie. He's very good again this time. He can just act with his eyes. He's very good. I was both entertained and gave me a ton to think about, whether it be religion, science, kind of so many different kind of elements of humanity that is in this zombie movie. It was either a brilliantly directed. It's a much smaller movie than the other ones, I feel, from just a scope perspective. I guess it still cost like $70 million to make, but just from a sheer just like kind of like what you're spending your time watching, it felt smaller to me, but smaller in a good way. I don't know. I really like this movie. Heavily recommended. 84.
Yep. Gooch, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I'm at a 80. So kind of in line. I was actually very shocked to hear those scores from critics and audiences. I figured this one would be a little bit more divisive. But yeah, 80 out of 100.
People seem to like agreeably like this more than the last one.
I'm very surprised. Back to your point about Garland and Boyle, to a larger extent, the two of them are so good at using genre filmmaking and big blockbuster filmmaking to actually tell stories with messaging and themes. Like, that is a hard thing to do. It's not easy, and they make it look easy. Nia DaCosta comes in on this one. Danny Boyle, I think, still the second unit director here. She offers a different kind of movie. I do think it loses. Sorry about the siren going in the background, but I think it kind of loses a lot of the visual flair that Danny Boyle brought with the last one, but she's able to make up for it with just a really amazing story about religion or science. And it gets fleshed out. And two of the, I'd be shocked end of the year, if we don't have how many better performances in blockbusters are we going to have this year than Ralph Fiennes and Jack O'Connell? Like, it's hard to imagine there'll be many, and then just going at it against each other was amazing to see. Ralph Fiennes, I think we talked about him during our best performers of the last decade draft. He snuck in. I shouldn't say snuck in, but he got in, I think, 7, 8. He's just gotten older, and it's crazy. He's gotten better. He's gotten better. Like, he's one of the best actors alive, was in the 90s, was in the 2010s, and he continues. Something about him aging, it just gives him a softer face and lets him access things that he just couldn't before, and he's brilliant in this and very... I mean, the third act, we'll talk about it in a minute, but so fun. 80 out of 100. I could see myself coming up on this too. I mean, really, really good.
Ken Jack, what about you?
I'm in an 82, and I think I liked the last one like incrementally more than this one, and I definitely like 28 Days Later better than both. But where I think the last movie really had to spend a lot of time like reestablishing the world and like setting up the path for us to like kind of go down, this had more space to do stuff. And I think DaCosta takes that ball from Boyle, who's like, Boyle's one of the most like distinctive audiovisual guys in the game, right? And so you have to kind of replicate what he's doing a little bit, but also make it your own. I think she definitely does that. And this movie is really, it's just like a dance between Ralph Fiennes and Jack O'Connell. And like, they're two very different types of charisma. Like O'Connell's like Hitlerish type of character, where it's like, you take these people in like their shitty position, point the blame at other people, and then you rule by fear, right? Like, he's the Hitler guy. And then Fiennes is weird, like dogma too, right? Like, he's in a bone temple. He's like doing the Memento Mori shit. Like, he's a weird guy, but he still draws you in with a weird level of charisma. And so like, they be, and it's basically like, who can eat who, right? Like the two, like only one of us is going to make it out of here alive. And I think that their battle between those two actors, both in characters and like performance, is incredible. I think the worst thing I could say about this is that like, it doesn't have that same visual or audio act like sauce as the last one, like not even close. And that, cause that movie 28 years later, it's like, that's a beautiful movie. Looks gorgeous, beautiful. The shot we talked about, actually, Clement, when you were leaving, the one where they have to run down the causeway at night, like that's one of the coolest shots of last year. It's so fucking cool. And the soundtrack on that was amazing too. But DaCosta brought in her own cinematographer, she brought in her own composer, and that was totally missing here. Like, it doesn't have like that signature shot or like that signature moment. It doesn't have that look.
Oh,
really.
I disagree with that. It's
little leagues to major leagues to me. It's like, it's crazy, but it doesn't matter, because the story here is so much better than it was in the last one. And it's just so, you get so much more out of these actors. You get so much more out of the story. You really get a lot more. I would say I was way more engaged with this on a story level, like equally engaged with this on a story level as I was on the audiovisual level with the last movie, which is incredibly impressive. So very, very like this movie is a bunch, 82.
Yeah, I'm high. I'm up. I'm with Clemmer. I gave it an 89. It's two ticks higher for me than the previous, which I gave an 87. Was in my top 30 for the year. It's a hair below the original, but I think I like all three of these. I think, well, obviously Weeks is a pretty large step away from all of these.
I don't that one still though.
Yeah, I don't hate it. Like, I'm not saying it's like in the 40s, 50s, but it's like, it's in a different category for me with them. I'd agree with what Kendrick said on the visual stuff. It may not hit as hard, but I think there's still some great moments, especially with the Fiennes character, especially in kind of like the darker settings and at the titular temple. But I think the story and character stuff is like I don't say a large step up, but like, I think it makes up any ground that there may be with maybe it not being overly as gorgeous to look at start to finish. And it makes up that ground and kind of surpasses it in that sense. Cause I just think the story's better here. And I love the character stuff. I love the focus on the two. I mean, again, Alfie Williams in this, I don't think Spike's as much as like the center as Jimmy is, as the Jimmy's as well, plural, as well as Ralph Fiennes, Kelson. And I think those two, when they are intertwined, that's as good, like that's as good of a back and forth you're going to see for a while this year, now that we're in January. And I think I agree with Gooch. You know, obviously this is like the blockbuster year of the millennium. So we'll see like who else can top that. But I mean, in terms of like a duo in a movie, you're going to have a hard time finding anyone better than that for a while, at least now that we sit in January. They're just that good together. And Fiennes O'Connell's great, but Fiennes commands a screen in a way that most people can't even fucking come close to touching. And I just like there. My thing is, if you would have told me a couple years ago, and I like Danny Boyle and I trust Danny Boyle, he's had some stinkers, obviously, but he's had some movies that I love. I know Clemmer loves that Yesterday movie.
I don't love that. I love the idea of it. It's great.
Yeah, no, great idea. You know, that was one of our on our Twitter account at Life Camera Pod. That was like one of our most retweeted trailers ever, because people were like that blown away by the idea.
Great concept.
I know Clemmer does not like that movie. I don't either. But my point is, I trusted it, but it's like, you know, how many more of these? Like, you know, just all right, zombies. I love the idea. Like, this franchise continues to be a step ahead of the genre, where everyone, you know, where everyone's like, hey, but more zombies, here they are. No, this is like, okay, what's the end game here? How do we, can we reverse this? I just love that element of this. And it keeps me engaged, keeps me interested. And it's like, I love the idea that like the non-zombies is like the darkest people in this shit and is like the most fucked up. This is a fucked up movie, by the way. There's some This is not for the PG crowd. Let me put it that way. There's some things that made me a little squirmish. I just love that. I think it. I'm very excited for the next one. Let me put it that way. Like you want to talk about moving this in a direction that is different and kind of like it's kind of the same thing for me with the whodunit mystery genre with Rian Johnson. Even if like you don't love all three of them, like it's the idea that there's at least an attempt to like do something different. And to try to like leapfrog what everyone else is doing and try something different in this zombie space. And I think it worked great here. I think this was excellent. Shout out to Nia DaCosta, who, I mean, with the Marvels. I never really hated Candyman, but like I think she had a home run here. And also Alex Garland is very fucking good. He's really good at what he does. So yeah, 89 for me.
Remember when people tried to say he was like a hack? Like there was that moment after Civil War where people were like, he's washed. He's been carried all these years. No good. Thank God he's retiring as a director. Like, what the fuck were people talking about?
This guy can write any type of stuff. I mean, talk about that rap sheet there. 20 years later, Warfare, Civil War, Annihilation, Ex Machina. And now they all have obviously like a similar feel to them, right? Like they're all very like cerebral. Like they're very like big, but they're such different types of movies in terms of like, what the genre is like. It's this guy's as good as anybody. He is a fucking, I would love to see him paired up with like a really big time movie, like a big swing, huge director. I think that'd be great.
I've never seen a movie like, we've all seen a lot of movies. I've never watched a movie like this before. This was a completely unique movie going experience for me.
Yeah. I'm actually very excited to watch it again.
Yes,
and see if this kind of bumps up, because this is off to, I'll tell you what, that is going to sit in that 80, that's going to sit at the top spot for this year for a while, I would assume.
I know. Well, right,
like that Project Hail Mary movie coming out in March is apparently very good. And I guess some people are into The Bride. We'll see.
I'm excited about The Bride.
I'm gonna prove me wrong status with The Bride.
I'm excited about The Bride.
What about Elvis? Elvis in 3D, the Elvis experience from Baz Luhrmann.
I'm generally going to see that. Like, I'm very excited to watch that and know that he can take no creative liberties to ruin it.
Well, that's going
to
be 100 out of 100 because he's involved, obviously.
What was, by the way, before we move on, what was the reaction in your all's theaters when, spoilers, third act, Ralph Fiennes musical sequence? What was the reaction in your all's theaters? Because mine, like, once it ended, legit, people stood up and clapped. Like people stood up and clapped for that.
I didn't get a clap, but you could sense the energy. I mean, I kind of like, you see people looking around being like, wow, it was fucking unbelievable. Like that is just such a unique, fun character. And they obviously had it in the last movie too. Music was a big part of that character in the last movie, but it's just such a different vibe and energy you'd expect from a brutal zombie and like apocalypse movie.
That's what I push back on Ken Jack. He's like, there's no, like moment or look at how that was shot.
I think Danny shot brilliantly.
I like it a lot. Danny Boyle on that takes that to an 11. I think
that's not fair. Danny Boyle also maybe doesn't have that. You don't care about the character as much. Maybe
that's true. That's what I'm saying. That's why it's so close to equilibrium for me. Where like the story, or her spin on the story, or her ability to make you care more about these characters, I think was way stronger than Boyle. But the audiovisual is just so heavily weighted.
I thought the audiovisual in that entire sequence was fantastic. Like Gooch, I'm not surprised people stood up and clapped. I was like, this is awesome. Like it was incredible. Whatever, 3 minutes of movies like that. You aren't going to get three better minutes of movies this year too often. And we're in January 18th.
Oh, some scenes then I think we're really cool from this. I'm curious what you guys took from it too. When Samson like wakes up on the train, like, you know what I mean? Like comes to, that rocked. Holy shit. That was cool. Like, I forgot my ticket. And they're all just like looking at him like, oh man, that was so good.
Dude, when he steps out of the, that's probably one of my favorite shots of the entire movie. But when he steps out of the train car, in the night, in the moonlight, covered in blood, looking like Satan himself. That was amazing. And that's like, you know, he's the devil, like all that stuff. Like they're playing with religion. I really love the stuff they do with religion here, which is crazy after years and years of just bad religious movies and bad takes on religion in movies that we've had two in the past year. Yeah. Funny you brought up Rian Johnson, Jeff, because two in the past year that really seemed to have a nuanced take and a very thoughtful take.
Yep. It's
Me and Clever, before I forget, one scene that we mentioned when we both left, the scene where that girl gets killed by the hook, that fucking rocked, dude. That was really
incredible.
That was crazy.
Really good acting by her there. You could almost see like the life like leave her eyes. Like, that was really impressive. That whole barn sequence, like, you're on the edge of your seat the whole time. And like you said, Jeff, like, that, I'm guessing that's what you're referring to. That was one of the most like brutal scenes you'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time. Yeah, I think thoughtful is the best way to describe this movie. I have that word in my review for Letterboxd. I think it's just, it's a movie that moves in a way and says things and is trying to achieve things that you just haven't really seen in zombie movies. And we got a piece of that in the last one, so it's not just this one. But I think the direction of the franchise, it's like, we live in this world where so often you see a movie in a tentpole or something, and you're like, another one. They're coming with I'm like, very excited for the next one. And full spoiler, at the end, Cillian Murphy shows up, as we call all the way.
You want more or less dong in the third one?
Less dong in the third.
I don't know.
Will there be more or less? Well, we're trending towards less, right?
I couldn't really decide. There's clearer shots, I feel, of his penis. Yeah,
maybe
one,
if you're talking,
maybe less. There was one when they're sitting on the hill. I'm sorry, his dong was out the whole time. They're sitting on the hill, and you just see like the top of his cock.
Yeah.
It's just like, why is that included in the shot? Like, you're not even going to show the tip.
You get it from you get dong from Ralph Fiennes too. You just just a voluntary disrobing. There's like three or four things in this movie that like they just shouldn't on paper work at all. Like, them tripping balls together in the hills, like in the middle of a zombie apocalypse, that shouldn't work on paper. That's a horrible idea. Like, even turning, like giving you some sort of like a solution to the zombie, the virus, like that shouldn't really work either. Like the whole Jimmy's thing, that shouldn't work. Like, there's a million things in this that should not work at all, considering what this franchise is, and they all work. And I think a huge credit to Boyle, but also DaCosta in this, because I think she had the way harder job, I would say, in this one versus the last movie. And man, dude, it excels. It was so good.
Credit to them for not burning Cillian Murphy too soon in this trilogy. They waited for the, I think, the perfect time. I think this is the right move for when they brought him back. Excited.
I would love to know like what the pitch was when they brought this to Sony 4 or 5 years ago. Like, what did they like? I'm sure, but I'm serious. Like, they probably, this is very well, and it's funny that Lord of the Rings is back in theaters right now, because it does have that feel to it where it's like, this all feels very planned from the start and
cohesion.
Yes, exactly. Which just makes such a difference. Yeah. When are we getting, do we know when we're getting the third? Have they started?
No, I don't think so. Cause I don't think there's an official title yet, but I would assume they'll turn it pretty quick, knowing how quickly Alex Garland
I just worry about, this movie is not doing well, like you said, Jeff, in the box office. I'm a little concerned. A-minus cinema score too. Like, I hopefully the word of mouth gets out and people are excited about this. I don't know.
There's going to be a part three. Obviously, it's not doing great, but there is going to be a part three. They already said that. So,
it's also a tough time of year.
Yeah, excited to see.
But Dogman opened up with $35 million in January.
True. Kids movie though. Versus R-rated.
Yes, that as well. All right, this episode brought to you in part by DraftKings. That's right, folks. The NFL playoffs in full swing. We are closer and closer to the big game. Conference championships coming up next weekend, and there's no better place to enjoy the NFL in terms of the official sports betting partner than DraftKings right here. There's no better place to be than DraftKings when you're watching these games, whether it be an anytime touchdown parlay, live scores. You want to just throw money? Hey, Moneyline, maybe Stidham and the Broncos pull it out next weekend. Congrats, but also sorry to all the Bronco fans that listen to this podcast. Could be an anytime touchdown parlay, maybe first touchdown. Maybe you had Mecole Hardman last week. You want to run it back again. Plus, DraftKings has the biggest thing, the biggest advantage over everybody. They have the early exit protection. That is right. If your player goes down in the first half, I think saw last week Troy Franklin, for the Broncos, can't speak, but Troy Franklin for the Broncos went down early. Guess what? If he was in one of your parlays, if the player is in an NFL-eligible prop bet and he goes down, you still get paid in cash. He goes down in the first half, you get the protection from DraftKings. Not going to get that love anywhere else. DraftKings making sure that your NFL weekends are the best. New customers bet just $5. And if that bet wins, you get $300 in bonus bets instantly. DraftKings Sportsbook, every drive, every play, every moment. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code BIGSCREEN, BIGSCREEN. That's code BIGSCREEN to turn $5 into $300 in bonus bets if your bet wins. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Let's move on.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, wager tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 and over in most states. Void in Ontario. Restrictions apply. Bet must win to receive bonus bets which expire in 7 days. Minimum odds required. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. Limited time offer.
Quickly, did anyone other than me and Clemmer see Greenland 2?
Migration.
No,
Greenland migration. They call it Greenland migration, but it's also marketed as Greenland 2 migration. A real inconsistency there. I don't love.
We mentioned this. We got sent the movie by I forget who. Like, hey, Christmas came early. We're giving you Greenland 2 to watch and stream. And we're all just kind of like, eh.
Rather have
coal. I was like, that's all right.
Well, I waltzed the theater for this one, gave it a 38 out of 100. In the aftermath of a comet strike that decimated most of the planet, the Garrity family, who can forget the Garrities, must leave the safety of their Greenland bunker to traverse a shattered world in search of a new home. Hour and 38 minutes long. Rick Romanwa, the director, did Kandahar, Greenland, Angel Has Fallen, Gerard Butler back, 14 million at the box office. This has been out for a couple weeks now. 48-65 split Rotten Tomatoes, which I feel like 65 split for a movie like this on Rotten Tomatoes from audiences, that's bad. That may as well be a fucking 10. 5.8 IMDb, Metacritic 49, Letterboxd 2.6. I liked the first one more than I remembered. I went back and kind of read my notes on it. I don't remember anything from that movie. It's easy to confuse with like Moonfall and all that other bullshit that he did.
No, Moonfall's horrible. So,
I mean, all right. I mean, you're talking like, I know... But you get my point, though, Clymer. Let's not pretend Greenland stands out like this unique release.
I liked Greenland 1. I just rewatched. I watched it for the first time. Excuse me, before this one to prep for it, and I liked it. I thought it was like a good movie. Is it great? No, but like I don't know. I have it like in the 70s, low 70s, the original one. This stinks. This is like a 36. This stinks. The first one was well thought out, and like all right, well, I can see these characters making intelligent choices. This is just a depressing slog that literally steals the plot of A Land Before Time. You're looking for a nice place to live, I guess. This stinks. It costs $90 million to make. It's bizarre because we'll have expensive shots that you'll see for 10 seconds and never again. And then they'll just put you in some depressing room for 40 minutes. This movie stinks. It's one of the biggest drop-offs of a sequel I can remember. Avoid this at all costs. Migration. Lousy movie.
Excuse me. I was thinking of Geostorm. I'm confusing another movie with another movie. They all blend together for me. These doomsday movies. Mm-hmm. This just apocalypse like. Which by the way, Geostorm. Look it up. They stole the poster from Inception. There's no other really way to describe it.
Yes. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It looks just.
It's like it's unbelievable. The first ever ChatGPT image creation was the Geostorm poster. They said, change this to say Geostorm and just put Gerard Butler on it.
The exact font, the exact like red color in the street.
Yeah, it's crazy. Put them side by side. It's crazy. Geostorm gave a 6 out of 100, so significantly worse. But yeah, this one, Clemmer, your Letterboxd review was spot on. It's lifeless. There's like no fun to be had here. I know it's an apocalypse movie, but man, like, I just didn't care about anything. Think about anyone or anything in this movie. This thing stunk.
Oh, just like I said, a pressing slog. And it's just, you have the same director, and I know you have Gerard Butler, who I think can be fun on screen. There's no
absolutely
out here. That first movie, I genuinely liked. I think that was a good movie. And this was such a drop off from that.
Ugh, Greenland. And they can't decide on what to call it either. Ugh. Is it Greenland 2? Is it Greenland 2 Migration? Is it Greenland Migration?
Mm. Luckily, they won't have that problem with Greenland 3. I don't think
No, I don't think they will. This episode of Project Big Screen brought to you in part by HelloFresh. Dinner on the weeknights. Especially once that 5 o'clock window creeps around. Nothing worse. And you start on Sunday, you're like, you know what? This week, we're going to eat well. Going to make dinner every night, blah, blah, blah. Never happens, right? Never, ever happens. You get busy during the day. You get home. You don't have time to cook. But guess what? HelloFresh making that easy for you. It's about not just cooking, about the mental load of not needing to figure it all out. Go to the store, order something last second. HelloFresh removes all that completely. Pre-portioned ingredients, step-by-step cards, done in 30 minutes, and they're great recipes. Over 100 recipes every week. You pick what sounds good. You figure out whatever you want to make, whatever your taste is. Sustainably sourced seafood, antibiotic-free chicken, seasonal produce that all taste great and fresh. Steak, seafood at no extra cost. Three times more seafood options than they've ever had before. I love HelloFresh. You need an easy meal that is also good and worth your time and worth sitting down for. HelloFresh is the way to go. Go to HelloFresh.com/bracket10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free Zwilling knife, a $145 value on your third box. Offer valid while supplies last. Free meals applied as discount on your first box. Subscribers only. Varies by plan. Go to HelloFresh.com/bracket10FM. All right, moving on. Let's go around the globe of movie and TV news. Let's quickly run through the globes. Best Motion Picture Drama was one of the only real like surprises of the night, though it's one of those ones where you're like, is it that much a surprise? Like, I know the globe voting body is different, but typically things not from the United States seem to win at the globes, especially British. European Hamnet won Best Motion Picture Drama. There was expectation that Sinners might win that. That was the favorite going into the night. Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy, one battle after another, which for as much as people do make fun of it, kind of a funny movie in spots. Can't believe they didn't nominate that Chuckle Fest, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, for Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy. Animated, K-pop Demon Hunters seems to be well on its way to winning an Oscar. Non-English language movie, The Secret Agent, Brazil, pretty good at cleaning up at the Golden Globes. They cleaned up twice, because we'll get to the next award they won in a second. Jesse Buckley, best female actor in a motion picture drama. Wagner Moura, The Secret Agent, best male actor in a motion picture drama. We left him off our list last week. Brazil, not happy with us.
We're sorry, Brazil. Yeah. We hadn't seen the movie yet.
He was... the favorite along with Michael B. Jordan to win that award. That one wasn't as much of a surprise. Best performance by a female actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. There is that Chuckle Fest, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. Rose Byrne won for that. Best performance by a male actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy, Timothy Chalamet. Supporting, Tiana Taylor won. I thought there might be an Amy Madigan. Tiana Taylor ends up winning. And then for male, Stellan Skarsgård. So I will note, I've referenced him many times online and in past podcasts I've done, but a buddy of mine, Walt Hickey, who has a website called awards.substack.com, he has the best algorithm around in terms of breaking down what will likely win awards. And he had a whole article last week about what at the Globes matters for the Oscars. Basically, it's nothing, except you can start to use the Globes for supporting. Like, it's typically a sign that, like, for some reason with supporting actor and actress, once they get into a zone, that's just who wins. Like, it's a lazy voting system. That's how it happens for most awards. Though I would not count that race over yet for actress. Stellan Skarsgård's going to win for supporting actor, though. I don't know what happened with Sean Penn. I think part of it, some people don't like Sean Penn. But Skarsgård seems to be well on his way. Paul Thomas Anderson won Best Director. Screenplay went to one battle after another as well, though that screenplay award is a little different than how they do at the Oscars. They don't split it up. They split up everything else, but they don't split up screenplay. Original score was Ludwig Göransson for Sinners.
Oh, he did?
Which they did not show during the broadcast. They did not show it. Unbelievable.
Absolutely awful.
Pathetic. Best original song was Golden from K-pop Demon Hunters. That seems like that's a lock. And then cinematic and box office achievement, the new award, Sinners won that, which thank God they call it cinematic, because if it's just called box office achievement, you just put it into a spreadsheet and you sort it by most money. So that, like, I don't like, whatever. Sinners, it was cool that Ryan Coogler went up there and got to talk. So whatever. So here's kind of where we stand. I'll breeze through this as quick as I can. In terms of, we'll do the acting and we'll do picture. Supporting actor pretty much seems over for Stellan Skarsgård. Essentially a lock.
Yeah.
At this point.
Great speech, by the way.
Yep.
Yes.
Really, really good.
Yeah, very enjoyable speech.
I know you guys are high on Sean Penn. Skarsgård is better. I think he's really good.
Oh, very deserving.
But here's my problem, and I will note, you could say the same thing about Sean Penn. I don't think he was a supporting actor. He was the lead actor in that movie.
That's fair, Jeff.
But you could also probably say the same thing about Sean Penn, because Sean Penn was as critical in that movie as Leo was as well. So it's not like Sean Penn had like the moonlight role. Mahershala Ali. It's not like he was in it for like 5 minutes. He was in it for a while. Yeah,
but he's not. But Leo's the protagonist. Like Sean Penn's not. Like Skarsgård's the protagonist. Like that's a fair point. He probably should not.
He's amazing. He's unbelievable, and I have zero issue with him winning. Zero. He's also fucking amazing in Andor, by the way. We're rewatching Andor. So fucking good. Actress is interesting. So Tiana Taylor is the favorite, but I'm looking at Awards Expert right now. Good website. Probably the best website for award stuff now. I think it's Pascal Derby. Tiana Taylor is not as full on strong of a favorite as all the other three. I would still keep an eye on Amy Madigan. Amy Madigan is still winning a lot of local stuff, smaller awards. Those do stack up. So I'm very curious what you see happen at the SAG and going forward, if Amy Madigan can kind of make that push. And because that's going to kind of be weapons one thing anyway. So I wouldn't rule that out. Actor is...
Amy Madigan, too. One more thing, Jeff. Amy Madigan's very well liked in Hollywood. Her husband, Ed Harris. She's been working for a long time with a lot of people. She has a very long career. The voting body, I could see really appreciating what Amy Madigan's done for the last 40 years in Hollywood.
Yep. I would not rule it out yet. That's going to be a very interesting race. Chalamet is basically done. I thought Chalamet, I don't know if you guys agree with me on this one, I thought Chalamet's one hurdle. I had some people ask me this the other day, and I said, I think the only way he doesn't win is if he pisses people off. And I think what you saw at the Globes is he's dropped the Marty character in his... He's a little more laid back. He's a little more drawn back. He's not as aggressive. It was a very nice speech, like very humble. He had a good little Kevin O'Leary Shark Tank joke. He's definitely scaled it down since the press tour. And my only concern with him was like, if he's just going to go up there and be like this, like over the top guy the rest of the way, like that could piss people off. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's over now. And then actress Jessie Buckley.
I kind of want to see him pull it out for best actor if he ends up winning at the Academy.
Yeah, he just goes back up. He's fuck all you, you fucking losers.
fucking Leo, you bum. Get out of here, unk.
Ethan Hawke, you fucking douche. Actress. Jessie Buckley for sure, though I do think you're going to see her odds, and we'll talk more about odds with DraftKings and everything when we do nominations. I do think the odds are going to shrink a little bit because I do think Rose Byrne is going to win a couple awards here and there. But that's basically over for Jessie Buckley. Director is basically over for Paul Thomas Anderson. Which about time, right? Good.
Another great speech.
Picture is the interesting one because you just don't know. The Academy voting body grows every year. It gets younger every year. I think a lot of people like One Battle, but here's my thought, and let me know what you guys think about this. I think it's likely a two-horse race. I don't think Hamnet can beat Sinners. I think it's Sinners or One Battle. Right now, the odds, according to awards experts, 91% for One Battle. Here's my thing. I don't know if you guys have seen this. One Battle does have some detractors who don't view it as like the revolutionist movie that it should be. Now, if the theory is that the voting Academy for the Oscars is younger, more diverse, does that sentiment seep in? And does Sinners kind of slide in above it? I don't think it'll happen. But if there's one way to sit here and be like, okay, how does One Battle lose? I do think that's it. I'm not saying I agree with it. I fucking love One Battle after another. I think it's amazing. I'm just telling you what I think the landscape says, that if there is a way for that to happen, I think that's probably it.
I have an issue with the idea that Sinners would win Best Picture, but Cougar wouldn't win Best Director. This isn't Driving Miss Daisy, where you have kind of a weak director, but the rest of the movie kind of lifts it up enough to win the award.
Go talk to Ben Affleck about that.
Fair, right? Like that's that he got fucked. He should have won, but regardless, I don't know if you can have Sinners win Best Picture and not have Coogler win Best Director. The movie's so good because it's Coogler. Like, that's why the movie works. I think One Battle After Another is just gonna run, win both. I have a hard time seeing a world that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I think the second the Teyana Taylor win happened, I was like, ah, this is kind of a wrap for it. Like, One Battle is just very, like, stronger than I think we realized.
It's definitely stronger, though. Teyana Taylor winning the Globe, I don't think has any insight with picture for the Oscars, though. Because the voting body's so weird now. It's just so, it's very hard to read at this point. But I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think that's the one thing. If you want to see the worst collection of movie takes in the world, go download Threads from Instagram. Oh my God. You go read Threads. One Battle is like a superhero movie to those people on Threads. It's unbelievable. Like, I mean the superhero movie from the directors of Scary Movie, like that movie, like it's a 0 out of 100 to some people. It's unbelievable. I think it's the first social media app I've ever deleted. I was like, I don't want to read these anymore. This is insane.
I think Gooch makes a good point, though. If Teyana Taylor is a pretty good bellwether for, like, just looking further on, like, if she keeps picking up wins.
For sure.
If she's doing well in those odds, if she wins, then I think that's a canary.
It just, that Oscars picture voting pool is, it's like a different planet compared to the other award. It's like, it's just, and it's become so big. I just think that's the only way it loses. That's, I guess, kind of my point. I don't agree with it at all, but I do think it's the only way.
You give Hamnet 0%. I don't think Hamnet should win or even really be in the discussion of winning this year. I really liked it, but you don't think Hamnet has any shot?
You could probably sit me down for 15 minutes and convince me that One Battle and Sinners. The problem, again,
split somehow.
The problem with that is that the idea of splitting doesn't really work with the best picture because it's ranked choice. But you could probably convince me after a while that some way, shape, or form, like someone who votes Sinners puts One Battle lower, someone who votes, I guess. It's probably the only other one, though. It's not Marty Supreme. Marty Supreme is obviously very, its heels are dug in the acting category.
Any other big takeaways from the night for you all? It was a great, I mean, that's one of the bigger Globes I can remember in the past, like, 10 years in terms of star power. There was a lot of fucking big stars there. It felt like the Academy Awards at that point.
Clooney, when they're coming to the crowd. Like, down the line, Julia Roberts, you had a lot of stars there.
I missed the whole thing because the Chargers game, but the only thing I saw after that I thought was very funny was the UFC thing, which was hysterical. I still can't believe
what a tie-in.
That was insane.
Yeah, so we'll talk about nominations on Thursday. Supporting actress still has some question marks for its final two spots. Wumi Musaku from Sinners is kind of rising up. Could there be a surprise from Odessa Azione? I'll tell you what. I wish that fifth spot went to Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
I love Gwyneth Paltrow.
I also wish the Academy Awards weren't 3 months away.
Yeah, that's also true.
That's fucking insane.
The
We gotta figure out a way to talk about these. Like, are we just going to put this in a box after Thursday, basically? Like, we can't talk about this for 3 months.
No, yeah, you kind of have to. We'll do a little update after, like, the big one. SAG, kind of like there's big swings.
That's coming up, right?
Yep. And then I guess picture is going to be an interesting thing, too. It seems like all 10 slots are fairly locked up, though you don't really know what some of those bottom four. F1 is making a late push from what I have read and seen, where it's close to leaping Wicked, and so is Weapons. Weapons and F1 are kind of dark horses to potentially get nominations that I thought were locks for both Wicked and Avatar a month and a half ago. And then, I would love Train Dreams getting nominations is still the fucking coolest thing of them all, just because, like, it's the one thing Netflix didn't push as hard as anything and ended up getting it should end up getting a nomination. Also, one other note, three movies have got 14 nominations all time at the Oscars. Sinners and One Battle both might get that in the same year.
That's crazy.
Like, almost a lock, actually. And Sinners has an outside chance at 15. Crazy.
You know, the sad thing is, though, Jeff, is that Sinners might walk away with just one win.
It is, yeah, that's
win best score, and that's it.
Ludwig Göransson's gonna be the most decorated Oscar winner of all time, potentially. Like, he is on the pace. That is unbelievable.
He's that good.
Crazy.
I love that they have Ludwig Göransson going up to accept all the awards for Sinners.
Yeah,
the one.
Yeah. Quick trailer thoughts. Where do we stand with The Bride? New trailer release. Jesse Buckley, Christian Bale, Peter Sarsgaard, Annette Bening, Jake Gyllenhaal, Penelope Cruz, Julianne Hough.
I'm super excited for it.
I'm a fucking, I'm a motherfucker, dude. I've been on her train forever. Anytime she makes something, I'm going to be there.
The Lost Daughter, right? That's the movie Gyllenhaal made before this, with Olivia Colman. Did a really good job building up tension. It's kind of a movie that led to nowhere, but I think the actual direction is quite good. I'm very excited for this movie. Maybe more than I should be.
Didn't she direct- Wild. This could be, I mean, I can tell she's taking a massive swing here, which I love. And that's why I really can't wait to get into the theater, because this could either be really something special or an absolute disaster.
Let's go. That's why we go to the movies.
I know. I would love, I have no problems with a big swing. If it's a big swing, I can forgive a lot.
A lot of talented people involved. I think it's
there is. It's a great cast. So a Bride of Frankenstein reimagining. And then speaking of the Bride of Frankenstein, how about Universal Monsters? Another reimagining. Lee Cronin's The Mummy.
I don't think a trailer's done less for me in a long time.
Don't love that they got to call it Lee Cronin's The Mummy, but I get why. It's a reimagining of the Mummy franchise from director Lee Cronin. He did Evil Dead Rise. Jack Rayner in the lead role. Jack Rayner, shout out Transformers: The Last Knight. I believe he pulls out that like weird statutory rape card and shows it to Mark Wahlberg. He's like, "It's actually legal for me to date your daughter." One of the worst scenes in a movie in the last 25 years. No exaggeration. The young daughter of a journalist disappears without a trace in the desert. The shattered family is stunned when the girl suddenly reappears 8 years later. But what should have been a joyful family reunion quickly turns into a true and horrifying nightmare. Ooh.
But the trailer itself is just, I leaned over to Kenjack. We saw it together. And I said, that's one of the worst trailers I've ever seen. It actually, like, whatever happened, what happened to, what's her name, Kelly or whatever the girl's name is? I don't even know who the fuck Kelly is. How do I know what happened to her? I don't know anything about her. I mean, and that's fine. I don't want a trailer to give the whole movie away. But don't ask me what happened to this character. It talk about no excitement. Like, this trailer is awful. It does a horrible job getting audiences excited or thinking about this movie.
That tagline reminded me of, do you remember when the last Jurassic World came out? Like, they started pushing that fucking Dolores. They're like, where's Dolores? And I'm like, I don't know who Dolores is, and I don't care for Dolores. But I've been hearing, did you hear, like, I think, like, James Wan, like, walked out of, like, the screening for this movie. I read that somewhere. Like, he's like, the test screenings are so bad, and he himself was just like, I'm out of this. That's a tough sign.
Man, they were really trying to gas it up at the beginning of the trailer as best as they could. They're like, from the studio that brought you Weapons.
Yep.
And producer James Wan. And then they're like, and Blumhouse? Like, they're doing everything they can. Oh, look terrible. Clever, can I get a fart?
Yeah. Jack Rayner also in Midsommar and Sing Street, among other things, by the way. We'll at least give him credit for things that are good.
Jack Rayner.
Other news, two big pieces of news. Huge news, Kathleen Kennedy stepping down from Lucasfilm. Replacing her will be Dave Filoni and Lin-Manuel Brennan, who were basically there already. Dave Filoni had his hand in almost everything there. Ken Jack did a whole breakdown, kind of tiering the projects. I think there was a lot of good and a lot of bad. I think it's a mix of both. Also have to wonder how much of her stuff was hammered down by Disney. She did green light the Ben Solo project with Steven Soderbergh, and then Disney said no. But for every Acolyte, there's an Andor. For every Boba Fett, there's a Mandalorian. You know, you can go one way or the other on the movies. I'm personally someone who likes Force Awakens and Last Jedi and despises the last one. Some people are the other way. Some people hate all three. Some people love all three. So it's a weird thing to kind of assess, but there were enough hits and there were also enough misses. So I think it's a consistency thing going forward. Hopefully they find a consistency, because they've got some stuff where if they can channel that multiple times, we're cooking.
I think that, like, it is very, like you're saying, like, it's not very black and white. Like, oh, she's great or oh, she's bad. Like, she greenlit a lot of stuff. She greenlit stuff that people typically probably wouldn't. Like, would every producer greenlight Andor? Like,
probably not.
$250 million series about a side character from a spin-off movie, which had no star power attached to it whatsoever. That's going to be done in a political intrigue way from the guy that made Michael Clayton. Like, I don't think many studio heads are going to be like, I'm going to give you that money to do that series. Like, that's just not going to happen. And then you get probably the best piece of Star Wars media to come out since Empire Strikes Back out of it. So I think you could thank her for that. You could also be like, hey, maybe you shouldn't give him $250 million to the Acolyte or to Obi-Wan, or maybe put more care into those things. But that also, she came in at a time right when Disney was getting cooking with MCU, and it became quality over quantity, and quantity over quality rather. And I think that they've learned the lessons from that, because like, you delay that anticipation is kind of gone now with these bigger movie franchises. It's less like, I can't wait for the next thing. I can't wait for the next thing. It's more, I'll wait and see what people say. And I think that's the big issue now. With,
she most gets big ones. A lot of deserved flack on some things, and then also some undeserved flack on others. I won't defend everything she's done. Again, she's done some fucking stinkers. Ken Jack mentioned one, Acolyte stinker. Obi-Wan series was such wasted potential, gross wasted potential. But also, our good buddy Robbie Fox went on a Star Wars podcast the other day, and it was a debate of him defending Disney Star Wars stuff, and they were against it, and they were like blaming her for the price of Lego. I'm like, I don't think she was putting the price tags on the Lego. I think that's probably a bit unfair. Legendary producer,
Star Wars though. Fans being unfair to Kathleen Kennedy. Color me shocked. Now she's, I mean, you guys are saying it's not black and white, but I really think she's like one of the greatest producers.
Oh yeah, that I think it's Hollywood. A question.
Yeah,
every producer has bad movies they make too. Like it's great. It's, I don't know.
To Ken Jack's point, like she just, I don't know who would have done a better job in the last 10 years with what Disney clearly wanted with Star Wars. They launched a streaming service, and it was very clear they said pump out a bunch of shows.
Yep,
and she did the best she could of getting some people together and kind of put some hits out. I mean, like the fact that Andor is just a miracle. Like it really is. And Tony Gilroy has been very upfront with the fact that Kathleen Kennedy, the series just does not happen without Kathleen Kennedy. Like she is the number one person behind the scenes for getting that show made.
I don't have a dog in this fight, but I will say like those, I think for an average person that doesn't have a giant Star Wars connection, who maybe only go and see the movies, those last two movies, I think were terrible. I think most people feel that. I think, Jeff, I know you like that second. I think a lot of people feel like those last two movies aren't very good. So if you like, hey, I'm kind of annoyed with Kathleen Kennedy because those last movies weren't good, I kind of get that. But then again, like, I don't know, George Lucas made those prequels, and those suck too. So, like, I don't know.
Dude, and look at the other things. That's another crazy thing about the Lucas era. Like, people will suck that off for completely disregarding the prequel trilogy. But then also, like, think about this other stuff he made. Outside of the two trilogies, like the Ewok thing, like droids, like Caravan of Courage, or whatever the
Clone Wars movie that started that show. Terrible.
Dude.
Yeah.
He made so many bad things outside of the original trilogy. And these people just will try and gaslight you and act like everything he touched was gold.
Yeah. I think I think you hit it. There's definitely very fair criticism, especially because in the end, the movies are what made this franchise what it is. But then there's also just, I think you also have to acknowledge there is also some that is just like silly, but they move on. I don't think much is going to change because it's not like they went, it's not like they cleaned house and brought in new people. It's like the same fucking people. So, and then last note,
is there any concern with Filoni, by the way?
I think maybe a little successor. Bit. I think, yeah, maybe, but we'll see.
People are trying to drive the wedge already. They're trying to act like Filoni didn't like Andor and stuff. And like you go and people already redug up other things of Filoni being like, Andor's the greatest thing, blah, blah, blah. Like, they're trying to make that wedge. But I am very happy, by the way, that it is Filoni, because I do think him and Favreau both are one of the few people in the Star Wars world to actually realize like what a gift it is to have this fan base that like likes dumb puppets and practical effects and like simple, easy things. So I do think that they're it's in the right hands, at the very least at the I guess like actual experience level. I don't know what the producer level, but at that level, it's good.
Yep. And then lastly, Hans Zimmer scoring the Harry Potter HBO series. Obviously they had to go big on this one because they're replacing John Williams. I don't know, having a new Harry Potter theme feels kind of crazy too at the same time.
It's weird.
It's very strange for me because I mean the Harry Potter theme is iconic and it's fucking John Williams, but at least they got someone who is pretty elite.
I think he did like the main theme, and I know the first two movies. I don't know if he did like the third
Sylvester take over?
Maybe. Yeah. Somebody took over. Actually, the theme stayed the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Anything people have been watching, Clem, or anything extra you want to mention that you've been watching?
Please check out Super Critics. We did our first episode, yep. Batman 66. Doing Robbie Fox, super fun. Going through every single superhero movie ever. And next week we have Superman the movie, Christopher Reeve, a movie I love. Can't wait to talk about.
We will keep cross posting it with Robbie's channel, My Mom's Basement. So if you are subscribed to this channel, you will get a notification whenever that pops up on over on that channel. So go check it out.
Yes. Yeah. They're short episodes, probably about a half hour each. But if you just enjoy just kind of talking about movies, reviewing movies, and just kind of, and Robbie's great. Robbie really knows superhero stuff and he's super fun to talk to. I don't know how we're having a blast doing it.
Gooch, Ken Jack, anything?
Fallout I've been still keeping up on so far. Nothing crazy, I think, from that. Yeah, I think the way they did Deathclaws is really cool, though. That was, I think, a tough thing to try and bring from video games to real life, and I think they looked awesome. Should have been more deadly, but they looked
fun
awesome.
Fun episode.
Yeah, very fun episode.
Yeah, wild episode.
I need to bench that.
Wonder Man. I don't think we can say... I think we can because it's airing Monday. Wonder Man, the new Marvel series with Yam Abdul-Mateen. I'll tell you what. Really enjoyed it. Very different. Like, different than anything they've done. Even more different than, like, WandaVision. I have not finished it. And I don't know if I will. I might try to go week to week after watching the first couple. But I think you enjoyed it too, Ken Jack. Like a very different meta take on like Hollywood superheroes. And it obviously ties into the MCU.
Yeah. Really liked it. There's we'll talk about it when we're off here, but like there's a kind of cameo in like the first few episodes that's like awesome. It's so fucking good. Yeah, I think people are gonna like it.
Yeah, very, that comes like out to January 27th, so still a few weeks. I think actually tonight, the night we're recording this, the 18th, I think the new Game of Thrones drops, right?
Yes, tonight.
Mm.
Oh,
yeah. Yep.
I did see The Secret Agent. I just want to say that. Very good. Great. I would say teeters towards great. There's a framing device that doesn't fully work for me, but kind of comes through in the third act and ends up pulling through for me. Mora, just.
Yeah, very good.
He's so good. Beast. He's kind of out of the race in terms of best actor. But if he did like somehow pull off a miraculous upset, I will say wouldn't be like entirely against it. Like, I think he's that
is
good.
Is he going to get a nomination?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Secret Agent as well as It Was Just an Accident. And then I believe that's it, right?
Oh, no, we're doing Testament of Ann Lee next week.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about it closer to the Oscars.
Ann Lee we're doing next week, right? But then the other
I'm just saying the foreign movies we're going to talk about a little closer to the Oscars. So we will talk about Secret Agent. I saw Secret Agent as well, and I align a lot with what Gooch just said.
Oh, do you have physical media ever showing that off at?
Yeah, go for it.
Blade Runner. Collateral, one of my favorites. Django, which I thought I had Django forever, and then when I saw it was on sale, went to check, didn't have Django. And one of my all-timers, Children of Men.
I've been looking at the Collateral Steelbook for months now. I just haven't pulled the trigger yet.
Pull the trigger. I would do a full Michael Mann Steelbox collection. I wouldn't give a shit if I'm getting Miami Vice or whatever. I'm getting the whole thing.
I got a couple things here. Shout out to Gooch for the Arrow video sale notification. As I did, the Arrow are going to have to sit on the Criterion shelf, the Criterion. But I did get the Enter the Dragon steelbook. And this is probably a stupid purchase because I also own it in the Criterion for Bruce Lee. But it just looked too fucking cool, so I had to get it. And then I got from Arrow, Carlito's Way. Got Hugo because I need every Scorsese movie.
Let's go.
I got RoboCop. Oh, there we go. Great pick, Carlito's Way. Yep, got
RoboCop. One of my dad's favorite movies.
I'm in a lawyer no more.
A movie you're that I believe now. Not Martin Scorsese. Quentin Tarantino says the only perfect movie to ever exist, Witness with Harrison Ford. He said that somewhere.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. This is now I now have two copies of the David Lynch Dune. I have the Steelbook, now I have the Arrow one. And then look at this. Smokin' baby, the mask, special edition box set. Had to get the mask. So yeah, the Arrow set was great because I showed last week Lost in Space, Ninja Turtles. So good sale.
I like their packaging. They do.
Yes,
really
it looks
cool
nice.
Stuff.
I don't like. I'm obviously very like anal about organizing all these, and the Arrow stuff looked nice. Just along with Ken with Gooch's favorite, the A24, the A24 movies. All right, interview with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, The Rip. We talked about a lot more than just The Rip, but Ken, Jack, and Gooch got to sit down with them in person, met them, chatted with them, had some laughs. Here's the interview.
All right, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Project Big Screen. We could not be more excited to talk to you guys about The Rip, a movie we were fortunate enough to see. We saw it a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. Man, dude, there's something about just a classic cop thriller that I just feel like we miss, and we just like you don't get them a lot anymore.
Yeah.
It
rips.
It does rip.
Am I the first to say that?
That's what we like. But like Joe, especially with Joe Carnahan, we've always loved the Joe's. Like, his first movie was called Narc. Mm-hmm. Chase Patrick, Ray Liotta, terrific movie. And this is, you know, in keeping kind of the traditional spirit of that. Like you say, it has a little bit of a throwback feel. You know, Heat's a big favorite of ours. That's obviously big, expansive, epic kind of thing. But that classic crime movie with cop robber movie with really grounded characters is just one of my favorite genres.
It does something, I think, stylistically, which within the first 20 minutes I noted being like quintessential for any good cop movie, which is you have over-the-shoulder gun holster. You need that for a good cop movie. And you have cool cars. And I was just curious how
that's all credit to Joe.
Yeah. That's all Joe, that part of the
like,
style.
You guys still have these? I love it, but I thought this was like a dragnet.
This is for the
like,
dorks.
Felt right. Like Crockett and Tubbs, like from way back, the old Miami Vice.
I embraced it.
Yeah.
There are a lot of twists and turns in this movie, by the way. And you guys are both obviously very accomplished screenwriters. So when you get these screenplays, do you look at them from like an analytical or critical point of view? Or do you ever want to tweak anything or look at anything?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, the script was great when it came in, mm-hmm. and we've known Joe for 20 something years. Ben, I mean, how many years ago?
Yeah, did you do? 2004 or something. Yeah, like you want to add to things. You want to find something that inspires you to. I'm a big believer in that. I mean, mm-hmm. there may be directors out there who'd say, "Hey, just this is how it's written. Please do this." I'd certainly be willing to do it. I feel like I work best where you know you ask the actors to kind of bring something. You do research. You glean something from that, and you got to be willing to say to hear not. Throw that out, but I think it works well that way. And we had a great cast in this movie, a great ensemble, and I think all of them really made it individual and specific. But I mean, ideally, you know, you read it and you feel like, this doesn't need much, you know, it's terrific.
Yeah, you guys, speaking of the cast, you guys yourself, Catalina, Steve, and also Tiana are probably all gonna be Oscar nominees. And when I'm looking through that cast list, I'm like, is this kind of an Oscar bait movie a little bit? You're putting together an ensemble of all these like award heavy accoladed actors all into this one movie.
They weren't award heavy when you put them together. Yeah. I mean, they're all very accomplished and great. And then that's why they
kind of what we're doing. I mean, I think that's one of the nice things about it is like getting good actors to do good movies that, you know, like this idea of the bifurcation of like, well, here's this lane of award, take your medicine movies or something versus like, I don't see it that way. I think, you know, great performers. They've all done great work. They've all, like you say, been had their nominations and awards and stuff. But like, that's what makes it fun, even in a more, I guess, think of it as commercial genre, like, which just means, you know, there's real tension and stakes and it kind of driving towards a sort of climax. Those are movies that it's an art form. You can either do it well or do it poorly. And you're trying to do as well as you can. And I think the biggest contributor to whether a movie works or not, maybe not coincidentally, is good actors, you know?
Yeah, every genre, like I remember like those Jason Bourne movies, we always were, it was like Chris Cooper, Brian Cox, Joan Allen, David Strathairn, and Tommy Lee Jones. Like we were going after like the very best people that we could to fill them out. And it wasn't in order to win awards, it was just to make the movie as good as it could be. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd also read that you all get certain bonuses. The deal that you all struck is that you guys get certain bonuses if this movie hits like landmarks within a certain time frame. How'd you guys get that deal set up?
Well, that's an extension of like there were these strikes, right? Yes. And there was a lot of discussion about the way residuals used to work for actors. And streaming was new, and they had this kind of buyout model, sort of one size fits all. And as the business sort of shifts and evolves, and as it has throughout its history, there's obviously the strikes are an example of some of the tensions that arise around, are we being paid fairly or not? So during that time, we had been involved kind of informally of trying to put together a sort of residual schedule for streaming movies. And that wasn't ultimately what was finally adopted, but the experience of doing that was illustrative. And what we've always believed in, and what we did, for example, with Air and all of our movies, we've done crew bonus. We've tried to build incentive systems for cast and crew that have to do with aligning everybody and saying, look, we've got this goals. If we finish early or under budget, like, great. You should also benefit from that. And we want to find a way to go, like, if the movie works, you should benefit from that. And it's not just the actors. Like, it's not us all. Like, it's the actors, and there's 1,200 people on the bonus schedule. We're all in the crew. Now, they didn't take any cuts. They didn't reduce at all. What we're trying to do is bring that group of people who are just as important to the movie Absolutely. As everyone else. And it's not a cliche. Really, in my experience, is true. As a director, you want to really align everybody and give them a connection to the result of the movie. And is the movie going to be good? Rather than just divorcing, like, well, I get my check. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I don't really care. Most people aren't like that. Most good crew members, they're kind of doing it anyway, even though they don't benefit from it. But to codify that and build a structure out where you get what your rate, but then if the movie is successful, like by a certain number of hours watched in the first 90 days, you know, there's a meaningful bonus payment. It's like a fraction of your salary. And then again, another level, another hit and another hit. We wanted to unify and align everybody, cast, crew, every single person on the movie. And the cast, to their credit, did all take, you know, it was a way of doing back-end payments that you typically did for theatrical movies where you knew, okay, if the movie makes $100 million, well, you're going to get an extra X amount of money. That doesn't exist in streaming because historically, initially they weren't willing to share some of the information. And then it was kind of like, well, you get a little extra up front anyway. And now, because streaming's become the norm, there's a less willingness to pay, like, I think what they view as a sort of a pioneer tax. Like, hey, we had to pay extra to break into this business. Now we're employing everybody and we can't bear this extra cost. Like, these companies, a lot of them borrowed a lot of money to do a lot of production to lose money in the short term to accrue subscribers. So the economy sort of has to shift. This is our effort to try to establish a model that might work in the future going forward.
That other people can use. And the idea being, like, if these people all got together, in this case, like 1,200 people got together and made a movie that brings real value to you, and we can measure that based on how many people are watching and what that means for your platform, then all of them should share in that success, right? And that's new. The below the line side of it, which is more the blue collar side of our business, we were dead set on including them in this model, and in success, like, what we hope would happen is that other people in the business will adopt it.
And I would say too that, especially as a short time former grip, it makes me more invested to see that your guys' movie succeeds. I'm like, more like, I want to make sure that, hey, maybe if I'm not watching at this moment, I'm gonna keep it running because I know people are making money off this that are working on the blue collar side of it. So it makes me more
invested. Absolutely. Every standby painter, greens person, props, wardrobe, you know, it's 1,200 people, right? So you know, you've been on sets, scripts, electricians, cameramen. There's a lot of people that are really important that you need to make a film at all. And you absolutely need their dedication, their work to make it work really well. And it's also a way of instituting something that hopefully can serve as a means to kind of flex with, because it's a harder proposition to get people to make a movie that they think is less likely to succeed. Mm-hmm. So because, and the only gauge people have about that is what's succeeded before. As a result of that, you tend to see movies that are repetitive in one way or another, because people feel more comfortable investing in something because the last version of it made money. But actually, I think what creates value and what makes cinema more interesting is people who innovate, who change, who take risks. Mm-hmm. So the risk and the investment things are in opposition to one another. This might serve, I hope, as a template by which you can say, we know you think this is risky. We're willing to make it a safer investment for you to get in on, but we don't just want to get ripped off. If you're then successful, well, then we should do better than we otherwise would. And I hope that, you know, that would allow then more interesting films to get made.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys liked doing Artist Equity so far? Because that's a very, obviously, much less sexy version of Hollywood. And you guys were, I would say, when you barged in, obviously, you're doing all writing, acting, directing, all this stuff. And this is obviously a way less sexy version of it, but I think more important, especially for you guys helping your fellow actors, crew, all these people.
Look, it's interesting. It's really satisfying. It's not philanthropic or altruistic. It's respectful of what people do and how they contribute, and focused on a business that's dedicated to the idea that you've got to make movies that people want to see and that are good. And how do you do that? And we're trying to do like more, like we have this feature film writers room where we have writers working in collaboration with one another, like television writers rooms where they're all working on just different episodes of the same show. But, you know, where you have Eric Roth, who's a massive, successful sort of emeritus, you know, great film screenwriter. And he and we participate in this as well, help the development and the writing of the scripts in terms of giving feedback. And mostly the valuable part is like peer feedback. These writers kind of go in and write basically for scale, but they know that they'll get paid a lot more if the movie actually gets made, and even more if it's successful. It's another way we're trying to, you know, get around the fact that people, that it's hard to get in the business because you have to spend a lot of money on scripts and that a lot of them don't get made and it's just inefficient. And it's a way of working with writers whose goal is really to get their movies made and to do something interesting, and who I think helping writers work collaboratively, given how collaborative a medium it is, oftentimes writers are kind of separated, you know, and they don't get the exposure of the actors or the directors. And that's been really satisfying and really fun. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's a lot of work, and there's some of the work that's not what I dreamed of doing, but it's really interesting and engaging. And also, I get to be, I work in an office, be around my kids, which is cool.
There we go. Speaking of crazy scripts and big swings, recently your video from the Criterion Closet went viral again, speaking about the Armageddon Criterion Collection.
I love that, man.
Are there any other movies in your filmography where you'd love to just go through and just kind of pick it apart and just have fun with it?
A lot of them. And the thing about Armageddon is, like, I had a great time with it.
Oh, my gosh.
It was successful. I'm really proud of it. It's fun. It's... Michael has a very keen sense of,
it's
like,
iconic.
And by the way, the great, I mean, amazing actors in that movie that I loved working with, you know, like Billy Bob and
amazing.
Owen, yeah.
So good.
Shimmy.
I mean, to your point earlier, like, my God, like, look at the cast. That is like a murderous row in that movie. There's so many good actors.
And I remember Billy, this was, I guess the Oscars happened after the movie, but before Armageddon came out, I saw him at the premiere, and Billy won the Oscar for Sling Blade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we went after that, and he was like, hey, I saw you got that, you won that Oscar, didn't you? I was like, yeah, I mean... So what, they give you like half an Oscar? Because like you only wrote half the picture, right? That's what I mean. No offense.
You got the teeth down perfectly.
Oh my God.
Let's do that a lot.
He's one of the funniest guys.
One of the funniest
people. I'll give you two half an Oscar for that. That's nice. That's good. That's like a kid's Oscar, right? You get a piece out of it. Participation Oscar, is that what you got? It was a great bunch of guys, a lot of fun. And like, look, that Criterion thing, that was because I was too stupid and young to know that like, people are going to listen to this. I'm like,
yo,
what are you
doing? Multiple times.
I just told the truth. I was like, this seems crazy. Why are we training oil drillers to be astronauts? It would be a lot easier to teach astronauts to be oil drillers. But I think the audience now, like, because of the internet and shows like this that are focused on movies, that are just much more aware of that kind of stuff. And that's the kind of talk about movies that people do when they watch them.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of, you know, so I think the world's much more open and interesting to that kind of stuff. The problem is, like, if you had a movie, you're trying to promote it.
Yes.
You can't say it's dog shit.
You can't be like Mystery Science 3D or 3000 on it.
Like, and that's unfortunate. I mean, that's a painful thing to go through, and it's really nice when, like this, when you're proud of the movie. But I mean, somebody would have a great show bringing people on, like, talk about the worst movie you've made.
That's actually a good idea.
Every studio is like, avoid that show.
Please don't do this. You're contractually banned.
Yeah.
Come on, I went on The Tonight Show. I've always been, I remember when I did Gigli and I got like the, you know, it was the worst scathing review. I feel like they didn't even see it. It was just like a chance to wail on a movie, you know. Mm-hmm. But they made a sport of it. It was like fun. Mm-hmm. Critics are great at, right? Like, it's the art of, and that's kind of become most of like film criticism now. It's just like pithy.
They're writing for each other. They're like, they have their list in their head of people that sweat. And they're like, ooh, what's he going to say about this? Mm-hmm. You know.
But I read all the bad reviews on The Tonight Show. Still my favorite things I've ever done. Because like at a certain point, you know, it is what it is. You're going to bullshit people and be like, no, I don't feel that. I don't listen to those things. And you're like, of course you do, you know. So
Sandra Bullock won the Oscar and the Razzie in the same
year. Yeah, that's right.
She fucking went.
Went to the
Razzies. It was like such a badass move, like to go win an Oscar and then go pick up your Razzie.
It was legendary.
Yeah.
Speaking of critics, one thing that we found funny on the internet so far with The Odyssey is, I was just curious if you have anything to say to the absolute nerds that have it's such a stick up their butt about the armor in the Odyssey. A fantasy, a fiction, not a real thing. This is not a historical event, something that did not happen. And they look at the armor and they say, that's not era accurate.
Yes, I mean.
I don't doubt that. I think Chris was pretty fastidious about.
I think technically, I think pictures have come out of what the armor really technically would look
like. It looks like a barrel they would wear when you run out of money in the Great Depression. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's make a movie, naked in wooden barrels.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people would probably not love the movie, you know, if we didn't take some creative license and artistic license.
You do, it's like with Air, like, yeah, we dramatize stuff. We, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's not a documentary. Because people also punish you if your movie's boring and lame.
Yeah.
So it's like, if that's what you would prefer. But I mean, certainly, I think you're barking up the wrong tree with a filmmaker like Chris Nolan, where you're going to criticize the movie. Okay, I'm going to take the other side. Go ahead.
That's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. He actually had an interesting kind of thing go make the rounds where he was talking about how one movie, whenever it comes on, he can't turn it off. And it was Talladega Nights. And everybody in the film sphere, like the super nerdy cinephiles, are like, how is it not XYZ, Citizen Kane, something like that? I'm curious if you guys have something where, like, maybe there's a movie where you, if it comes on, you need to finish it no matter what.
Well, there's a few. The more serious, like Goodfellas, I've actually had this experience where I'm changing channels and I see it and I'm like, oh, fuck. I just sit down. I'm like, wherever it is in the movie, I'm going all the way. Midnight Run was always that movie for us.
Midnight Run would be that movie where if that's on, I'm going to watch. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I think it's.
You have an actual pristine print of it?
Yes.
I got a print, yeah. In fact, and. I get this call from Paul Thomas Anderson. He was like, hey, Ben, what's going on? It's like, oh, hey, Paul. I'm thinking, oh, shit, I'm going to be in one of Paul's movies. All right, great. He's like, listen, can I borrow that Midnight Run? Fuck!
Like your neighbor.
Yeah, Paul, yeah.
We horse traded. We were like, we'll come over and watch it at your house.
I mean, you should get a credit then on One Battle. I mean,
yeah, because he lifted
Midnight
anything.
Run.
I feel I should, but strangely, I've been denied.
Yeah. Speaking of Paul and Tiana, also Golden Globes last night. Yeah. I don't know if you saw it closed out with, you had George Clooney, Don Cheadle on stage, Julia Roberts. Do we have any updates on Ocean's 14 and expand the cast? Maybe get him in there.
We'd take him for sure.
An uphill battle. I don't know. I've been auditioning for that movie. I keep on making new ones, and I keep on not getting it. I start taking it personally at some point. Ocean's 26. I mean, how many actors are left?
If we can get a script, I mean, I think everybody's inclined to do it. That's a group of people that loves each other, loves to work together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we come back, it's got to be worth it. You know, the last thing you want to do is lay an egg.
Yeah.
And try to go do that.
Yeah. Of course. We want to give you some rapid fire questions. The first one being, if you could rip one movie from the other person's filmography and replace it with one of your own, what would you pick and why?
Well, just let me answer the question. Is this because we want to have been in that movie, or we want
you to take that movie and you are now in that movie and they are in the movie that you had. So,
oh Jesus. Well,
for example, you give him The Accountant and you take away The Bourne or something like that.
Right.
Anything.
Right.
So this is a trade that's supposed to be good for me, or
it could be good for you, or it could be bad. It could be whatever you want. You could be like, hey, maybe Matt would have been great in this. Maybe Ben would have been great in this. I don't know.
Oh, all right.
You could play it any way you want.
I mean, I love The Town. And Argo.
People think you were in The Town. Sometimes we'll talk to our coworkers and they're like, Matt Damon was in The Town.
We're
right?
so strongly associated with each other that happened sometimes. And there was the Renner part, so people just kind of go like, yeah.
I remember writing that movie, The Town, and consciously thinking, I needed like some kind of a line that Matt would write here. Like, you know, it's like that the line that the Celtics ended up using about like whose car are we gonna take.
Yeah.
I remember that night being like, this scene's not working well enough. Well, how would Matt do? And I thought, oh, Matt would write a line like this. And that was the line. So maybe honorary.
I'll take credit for that, man. Jesus, that's a great line. The Town and Argo. I loved Gone Baby Gone as well.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Matt's made so many great movies. I think I would have loved to have been The Martian's a spectacular
movie.
Fucking really, really interesting, good performance movie. But Matt did a movie called The Good Shepherd that wasn't one of the most successful. So it's a movie I love and I think is really incredible. And
fascinating story too, the real, like all that stuff.
It's incredible.
It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the research, and Robert De Niro directed it, and the amount of like reading, the amount of research that went into that. Eric Roth, actually, who we were talking about earlier, wrote the script. That was a beautiful.
And there's some I just think, like, I look at Sweetwater.
Stillwater.
And I just think, like, that was one of those where I saw the movie and it was like, I couldn't reconcile the performance with the guy I knew. It was so profoundly different and convincing a character, it was like, that was one of those things where I really thought, wow, that's fucking amazing, that performance. It's one of the most impressive things I've seen. That was one where I was like, I wouldn't have wanted to do that. That was really hard. Mm-hmm. And I thought done very well.
Thanks, man. I mean, I think he's on a roll right now. Like, these, since about 2018, 19, like, the performances have been, he was always great, and we've always been each other's, like, fucking serious fans. But, like, there was just a level up that happened. And I don't know if that's just experience or age enough life in the kind of reservoir that is accessible to you, but you know, the way back, what he did in The Last Duel, which people gave him shit about the hair.
I love that.
That was really, I think a lot of us is having fun, you know, like directing became a real focus. And so then I started acting in things just if I wanted to, and not worrying about like
the, it's like when Sidney Pollack said to Terry Kinney years ago, he's like, you know why I'm a great actor? Because I don't give a shit.
You stop sweating all the stuff about, well, I'm going to come on, was this or my career? And I just thought, I don't care. I just want to do something that's fun and I think is interesting. And I'm going to worry about, you know, is this character likable enough? Like, just want to play the truth of it and explore this stuff. And I had a great time. And I've had lucky, you know, I loved working with George Clooney as a director. Gavin did a great job on The Way Back. Ridley was incredibly instructive. It's something that I realized Matt has really understood from the very beginning. And it took me longer to really understand at a basic level, maybe for me to start doing the job. But Matt always understood keenly that comes down to the director. You know, as an actor, even more than the role itself, like, if you're working with a great director, you know, and I don't think there are many actors living with a better resume of directors with whom they've worked than Matt, which is a testament to his like taste and this follow through on this philosophy. And
To be fair though, like when we were kids, we'd go to the movies every weekend and with, you know, me and him and then a group of us, you know, and we'd always come out into the parking lot afterwards and yeah, that movie sucked. And then somebody would say, you know, and he would always be the one from the time we were 15 years old. He was like, yeah, but you know what would have made it great? And he would script doctor the movie in the parking lot. And he was always, and everyone would go, oh, yeah, oh, fuck, why didn't they do that? You know? And so he's always had that kind of optimism about going into things. So there were things that he did that I'd go, early on in our career, I'd go, whoa, dude, you know, why are you doing this? And he'd go, yeah, because you know what's going to make it great? And he would pitch it to me, and I'd go, yeah, that is a great movie. But, like, if you're not with a great director who recognizes the great idea, you end up in their movie. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up for a period there in some movies where he knew how to fix them, but he wasn't allowed to. And then so the directing career has helped
take
him.
Take
the reins and be able to be the arbiter of taste.
Yeah.
There you go. Do it himself. So I was about to ask you about your favorite movies of each other, but I think we just ran through the gamut there. So we'll move on to the next one. You brought up, you'd been auditioning, you joked saying auditioning for the Oceans franchise, but is there a role that either of you, I guess both of you, have auditioned for, really wanted, but actually didn't get?
Oh, well, very famously, we auditioned for Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And did not get it. And our summer job that year was working in a movie theater in our hometown that had one screen and only played Dead Poets Society.
Oh.
So we literally, for four showings a day, showings a day. It was never not completely at capacity. We tore the tickets. We sold the popcorn and the sodas and the junior mints and milk duds. Told people to enjoy the show and then had to open the doors. They watched them come out crying, laughing, hugging each other, literally by the hundreds. And then we'd go in and sweep the theater up and get ready for the next group that was coming in. And it was instructive.
One of my kids a couple of years ago, he came into there and they were crying watching Dead Poets.
I've shown my kids. I mean, it's wonderful. And
they're all really good in the movie too.
Oh, yeah, it's not like you could be like, oh,
by the way, actors got the part. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like everyone was great. But it was a good lesson in like what's at stake in this career. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's not really an in between. You're either in the movie or you're sweeping up. Yeah. You know,
great character building moment. Now you guys get to tell everyone to not vote for Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, exactly.
We have no animosity. Yeah, don't hold a grudge.
You had the movie with Brendan Fraser, though. That was also a school one.
School Ties.
School Ties, yeah. That's right.
That was a few years
ago. So that was the revenge where it's like, well,
I don't know.
We're going to beat you, Dead Poets. We're like, we're going to beat you, Dead Poets Society. And it's like, oh, shit. Not quite. So has there been, you guys have been reuniting a bit more on screen lately. Has there been any projects, I would say, let's say before Last Duel, where you guys were like, maybe you were circling, maybe you were going to reunite on this, but then you just couldn't make the scheduling work or anything like that?
I don't think so. Was there anything before that?
Not really. So we had a production company together. It was much smaller, mm-hmm. sort of typical thing, but not really. We were kind of doing our respective things. I think one of it's like when we first sort of broke into the business, we were mindful of like, oh, you know, don't get so typecast as a team or a duo or individuate, sure. make your own way, et cetera. And then just got old enough to go, oh, fuck that. You know, nobody cares. It's like, let's do things that we love with people we love and that sort of thing.
I think getting old enough to realize that nobody cares. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a pretty solipsistic business and lifestyle. And to be fair, like, for us, it was a very abrupt shift to becoming famous and, like, literally felt like an overnight thing. And suddenly you're coming to events, you know, like junkets like this. There are people outside the hotel, for autographs, clamoring. You've got a few people around you.
Things about yourself.
It feels like the world actually revolves around you. And it's not until you get some distance that you realize it really doesn't. And nobody really cares that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been exacerbated by social media.
For sure.
I can imagine the young actors now must feel like, oh, my God.
Yeah, every facet of your life that you have to make performative.
But the truth is, nobody actually really cares. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we can. And also, like, we don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, we'd rather make
turns
movies
out together. Your own experience of your life is more important than whatever else.
You're saying it's not fun when people are taking pictures of you, like, with your Dunkin' Donuts at your front door or something like that?
Well, he's always got that worse than me. I never, you know, we lived down the street from each other in L.A. for 8 years. And, you know, also because he was married to Jen Garner at the time, and she's galactically famous. And so there were always cars kind of sitting out in front of his driveway waiting for one of them to come out. And we lived just down the block, and, like, I just came and went.
No problem.
I was like, I don't see what's so bad about this neighborhood. So I think some of that's the luck of the draw.
Yeah.
But it's also some of it is, like, there is, you know, some of it, it's not cultivated necessarily. Some of it is just the luck of the draw.
No, yeah, it's certainly not something that I desired. Although that's a hard thing to convince people of, because the appearance is, oh, you're thrusting yourself out there because I'm seeing you so much. Therefore, you must be complicit in that. Yeah. It's very counterintuitive to think, like, because you become aware, like, this is not good for me. Mm-hmm. It's not, I don't like it. There's no upside to this. Someone else is making the money that must be generated from these pictures or articles or links. I got to a point where I was perfectly okay with, because I had to go, look, I didn't know what the future would hold for me, but I knew as an actor, I knew Sean Penn and Madonna. I knew that happened, and I wanted to do it, and I didn't think that would happen for me in that way, but it did, and it can't take a lot of issue with that. What I do take issue with strongly is, like, when it impinges on my time with my children, and that I consider as private and meaningful, and it impacts them, and that, I think, is just, like, unnecessary. I don't think that people should do it, and I wish they wouldn't.
Yeah, and before we had kids, the magazine culture in the early 2000s was really powerful, and that really infringed on your career. And I remember him calling me. I was in Prague. I remember working on a movie, and he called me, and this was right after Gigli, and Ben goes, I am in the worst place you can be. He goes, I sell magazines and not movie tickets.
Oh.
And that is because you're going to be on the cover of Us Weekly next week, no matter what. And everybody does, you know, everyone's like, I'm sick. I don't want to see this guy.
Yeah.
Right. And he doesn't want to be there. And it's just like, but this magazine is just.
And in order to sell the magazine, look, now we've seen this phenomenon proliferate across the internet and everything throughout the culture, which is to say that, like, a negative tweet is more likely to be retweeted.
Of course.
Any story that can. So that the seeking to drum up not just controversy, but some way, it's like why the article about snubs is more interesting than the article about who is awarded someone, right? Like, there is something about us as human beings that's attracted to, I don't know what it is.
Get bad, angry
hating,
online.
Hating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it seems like perfectly innocuous and normal until you're the subject of it. And then you know, you, it feels very unfair. But I also think, just on a, forget about right, wrong, fair, whatever, just as an actor, your job is to have people believe that you're this person, right? You want to suspend people's disbelief. It's like, and it's, so it's I think really bad for people to just constantly be reinforced this image of like, he's not that person. You know this person, he's somebody else. And this is where who he really is. It just makes your job harder as an actor. It's sort of like somebody following a magician around and going like, look, see, there's two rabbits. You know what I mean? There's a string, that guy's in the audience, he's a plant.
The worst human alive, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, yeah, it's an illusion. We're trying to create an illusion. Yeah. That makes it much more difficult, which is why I think the phenomenon of social media makes it harder for young actors who are coming up, because the audience is learning so much about you and your personal life, and it's and you've just got to overcome that or deftly use an element or two of that in the performance. But there are people who can do it. Hats off to them.
Mm-hmm. So again, The Rip, January 16th. We had a great time with it. There's something Absolutely. About those cop action throwaways that we just love. And again, every time I watch one of these movies, I'm like, I really want that holster. I don't have a gun. I don't have
mine. Yeah.
Just something about that I love.
The 48 Hours, the Nick Nolte.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I think Bullet, Steve McQueen. That's the one that always comes to mind. Yeah. That in the car, which you have the sick car specifically.
That's
the Dodge Charger. Yeah. That is a nice one.
Yeah.
One last thing before we go. I did tell my in-laws who are Chinese that I was coming to interview you guys, and they wanted me to give you something specifically. It's a very special token of appreciation because they love the Great Wall.
Really?
No, they don't. I had to get one.
I was
one
so thing. Excited to meet somebody like that movie.
I had to get one thing in. I'm sorry.
I was going to take it home and show my daughter.
They're strictly Shaw Brothers family. They do not watch anything outside of that.
That makes sense. My favorite story about that movie is that my daughter calls it The Wall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Isabel, it's not called The Wall. It's called The Great Wall. And she goes, Dad, there's nothing great.
So bad.
Don't
show her the interview and just be like, what I got out of this.
Hope she doesn't listen to this thing.
But thank you guys so much for talking to us.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Fellas, you already know what time it is. It's time to level up. And Blue Chew just dropped something crazy. I'm talking next level championship belt gold-plated energy. Blue Chew Gold is the newest innovation from the number one chewable ED brand. This ain't your grandpa's little blue pill. This is the 4-in-1 beast that's setting the gold standard for performance. We're talking two ingredients for blood flow to keep that rocket pumping, mixed with apomorphine and oxytocin to turn up the arousal and connection in your brain and body. Blue Chew Gold dissolves under your tongue and works in as little as 15 minutes. That means you can get it on quicker and stay in the game longer. Elevation without hesitation. This is peak passion and peak performance in a single tablet. If your bed could talk after this, it'd be asking for a break. Make life easier by getting harder and discover your options at BlueChew.com. And we got a special deal for our listeners. Get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with code BIGSCREEN. That's promo code BIGSCREEN. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast.
All right, let's rank things here. You guys heard the interview earlier. Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. The Rip. Now let's talk about their best performances. So if they play a character in multiple movies, we're just going to consider that one performance. We'll consider that one performance. So it's kind of like characters slash performances, but let's let it rip. Gooch, Kenjack, myself, then Klemmer. The extra picks at the end will be Klemmer and Kenjack. So first overall, best Damon and Affleck performance, Gooch. Who and what is it?
I think they both have very... They've storied careers, I would say. There's a lot of movies that you could make the case for, but the heart wants what the heart wants, and that's Good Will Hunting. Yep. I mean, it has to be Good Will Hunting.
Who's one?
Ooh.
Well, it's only one. Here.
I mean, you only pick one. I can't get the I mean, it has to be Damon. Even though I do love Affleck, the suspect scene is just classic. But Damon is just so phenomenal. Like, clearly jumps off the screen the second you see him. Instant star-making performance. And really just showed, like, what he was about to be throughout the rest of his career. A very smart performer who can tap into just a very, very wide range of emotions with a leading man face. He is so good.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great 1-1.
It's one of the greatest performances of that decade, much less used two actors. Like, it's one of the great performances. He's so incredible.
Yeah, for a young guy too. Like, not like a huge ton of work under his belt.
Crazy.
It being his their script too. Like, it's there's so many levels to it, which are it's amazing. I'll back to back it with Affleck. I think Affleck in Good Will Hunting is also incredible. Like, he, it's such like a, I think like a generous performance, because like it's their script together, and but Damon gets the starring role, and but Affleck is so, he never steals focus or steals anything away from Damon throughout that entire performance. He's just doing his own thing and helping make, helping that character's journey along, both throughout the story and also like him as an actor, I guess, too. So many great like lines throughout it. But obviously the ending, he gets the, like, it's not your fault is the banger line everyone remembers from the movie, but like the whole ending scene where he's like, he, like, if you're here, if I'm gone, I'm going to fucking beat your ass. It's one of the all-timers.
It's the best scene about friendship ever on in film.
Yeah, it's so fucking good. Him just sitting there ripping a cigarette, man. Like, it's so damn good. I'm going to go with, yeah, Affleck, Good Will Hunting, Eric Good Will Hunting.
All right, get them both off the top. I like that.
I saw Good Will Hunting in the theaters. And I went to the theaters, and you kind of didn't know what to expect. Saw like commercials, whatever. Talk about being blown away. Because I'd never really seen Damon or Affleck. I hadn't seen Rainmaker yet, and I hadn't really seen Affleck or anything. And to walk out and just, like, immediately be like, oh, my God, those are two of the best performances I've seen in a long time. From two guys I never really heard of or seen before. It was something else, and they've been in our lives ever since.
Okay, so number three. So I have to do it, obviously, depart from Good Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting 1 and 2, Damon and Affleck. I'm going to go back to Matt Damon. This was a tough one for me because there's a more recent movie which I wanted to pick, but I think this performance is just bigger and better. I think it was the second best of the year that he did this, behind Michael Fassbender or Steve Jobs, and that's The Martian. Him as Mark Watney. He obviously, he's alone for most of that movie. I think he acts the shit out of it. I think it's, I know there's always a joke about that being winning comedy, but it is a kind of a funny movie in a lot of spots. He is very good in that role in like a snarky kind of manner. He, again, he acts the shit out of that movie alone, and he makes you, I think we talked about in our best cries, didn't we talk about The Martian, like the ending of The Martian's like almost like a hap, and that's a credit to him, because you were rooting so heavily for that character because you learned to love that character over just such a short amount of time. And obviously a lot of credit goes to Ridley Scott and the people behind making the movie and the original book, but Damon made that role what it was, and it's, I think it's my favorite Matt Damon performance overall. Favorite, I don't know if it's best. I probably would have picked Matt Damon Good Will Hunting first too, but like it's my I just love that, and that movie is so rewatchable because of him too. You want to talk about a movie that you can watch over and over again and kind of feel the same way every time? So yeah, Matt Damon, The Martian, 3 for me.
That's one of those performances where I feel like Matt in recent years has weirdly become underrated in terms of like the way the film, like real film heads like talk about him. It's weird. And I always just point back to that Martian performance. That is just 2 hours of a guy delivering straight to camera and has to carry it. It is one of the best performances. I love this pick.
Really, really good pick. Right at the top of mine as well.
Tom, you have 4 and 5 back to back.
You guys are all making great picks. So right now it's 2-1 Affleck. Or 2-1 Damon, excuse me.
2-1 Damon, yep.
It's going to be 4-1 Damon because both of these are Matt Damon picks.
Oh, no.
Number 4 for me is The Departed. Damon Departed. It's a really – to balance off DiCaprio like that and to shift like that and – it's just fantastic. He's so good in this. On the Rooftop is just so great, so slimy, such a piece of shit. I love it. I love that he kind of takes a lot of the goodwill, if you will, that like he's built up over the years, and then he plays this like just total piece of shit, and does it with a smile on his face. I really love Matt Damon Departed. I think he's better than DiCaprio in the movie. I think DiCaprio is great in the movie. I think
I can roll with that take.
Matt Damon, and that's, you know, Jack Nicholson. Think about all the great actors in that movie. I think Matt Damon is the best performance in that movie with all those great actors. Number 5 is Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
He's incredible in this. He's literally mimicking different people, taking their lives, whether it be Jude Law, down the line, just kind of the way he kind of like is able to kind of capture what makes them human, not just not even like look like them entirely, even like sound exactly like them, but I captured them as people and kind of steal their lives. And the back and forth he has with Philip Seymour Hoffman's incredible. Just a brilliant, kind of a really interesting, a beautiful movie directed by Anthony Mangella. I recommend it. People, it's an older movie, people haven't seen it, check it out. But Damon is exceptional in it. Very scary, very good.
And he's a tough job too, because he's going up against a law, Jude Law, who's like really good, like it's really in Paltrow too, like everyone that cast.
Cate Blanchett's in it. It's an incredible cast, yeah. And he obviously just he kind of carries it, which is incredible. And Jude Law, by the way, probably the most handsome guy ever in a movie.
Oh my god, that movie!
Tough to beat that.
He fucking glows crazy in that movie,
dude. They're like up and down the Italian coast or whatever, just like the coolest sunglasses you've ever seen, the big open outfit. Oh, dude,
like Matt Damon's so cool. A really handsome guy. He makes Matt Damon look ugly, which is crazy. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
All right, so 5-1 Damon, Departed, Talented Miss Ripley. It's I'm going to attack on another Damon. I'm going to take the recent one, which I think is first off, I think it was a snub. We're going to talk about Oscar snubs coming up in the next couple weeks. We'll do rankings for that. I think as important of a role in the movie as anything, I think it should have been nominated, and that's Oppenheimer, Matt Damon. I think that role and that performance is the bridge to like kind of the human audience viewpoint of what happens in Oppenheimer. It's such a nerdy, science-heavy movie that I think having that Matt Damon character kind of be, like I just said, the bridge. He is the audience in a way. I think it's very important. It's one of my favorites of his. Obviously, he's not like going out on a crazy limb to do anything nutso, but I think he just nails what it's supposed to be. He's supposed to be this military guy who has oversight on the most important thing that's, as he said, it's ever fucking happened. But also giving you that human element of someone who does trust him a little bit and does like him. And you're like, okay, I get what he's saying, but he's kind of like us also rooting for him. He has that great scene at the end. He's like, I wouldn't approve any of those other guys either. Or he kind of gives him the hat tip of like, yeah, but I'm kind of pro Oppenheimer. Like, I think it's a very important role in that movie. And I'm not saying it doesn't work without him, but I do think you could make the case that like without that, like some things would fall apart a little bit in that movie. You can get a little too like, what the fuck, with all the characters and all the scientists and everything. So I love Damon Oppenheimer. I have said for the last couple of years, I think he should have been nominated for that role. I think he was that good.
Oppenheimer is a very cold movie. It's a movie about like science and it just has a coldness to it. Matt Damon is the humanity in that movie. He is the warmth of that movie. He is the humor in that movie for a lot of it. Like
kind of the only humor for much of it.
Absolutely. Like he has a lot kind of on his shoulders in that movie, despite a pretty small part, to carry that humanity in that movie. And he does it exceptionally. It wasn't in my top 10, but just short. Like he's a fantastic movie. And I think you're right, Jeff. I think he should have been nominated.
Ken, Jack, you have 7.
I think I'll get Affleck on the board. I'll go with The Town. I think he's really, really, really strong in The Town. And you might be thinking, like, he obviously has another movie he directed, which is significantly more accoladed. But I think that his performance in The Town is super, like, it's just it's a hard role, I think, to be, like, the lovable rogue and pull it off. Like, the guy that's, like, doing the bad thing that you're still rooting for. Like, I think you see a lot of other movies try and, like, just take it for granted that audiences will connect with it, and it doesn't always work. But Affleck's got it. He's in like his element, both directing and being in Boston, obviously. And I think that character of Doug McRae is really cool. And I think when you think of all the great heist movies that come out, there are very few that like stick with you, especially more recent ones where it's like, you know, armed bank robbery heist. And this is one of them. I think this is one that really started against the grain. I really liked his performance in it because you need to be like both hard in the scenes where you need to be hard, but also like every scene with, not Rebecca Hall. Was it Rebecca Hall?
Yeah, right.
Like every scene that, like, you also got to be like tender. And I think that was hard too. So I really liked it. Enjoyed all the scenes, like, where he goes and, like, threatens, was it Pete Postlethwaite? In the flower shop. So fucking good. Like, the whole bank robbery scene, he's so fucking cool. I really like it. I really like him in the town.
Yeah. Good counter to Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
That's a good pick. Good Affleck pick. Gooch, you have 8.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Affleck. Let's get the score a little bit more even. I'm going to go with Gone Girl.
Yeah.
Another one of those roles that is just very, very challenging to pull off because he is such a fucking slime ball, but you have to empathize with him throughout the movie. He really never becomes a better person through that movie. And yet you find yourself like, damn, this guy's really stuck between a rock and a hard place. He pulls it off. And the stories behind the scenes are great too, between him and Fincher. And I don't know, Affleck really just taps into that movie star quality that he hasn't done it too much throughout his career, but he does there, and I love it.
He's so aloof in that movie, like perfectly aloof. And it kind of works because like Like when he smiles when he's like on camera and like it's just like
the smile's perfect.
He was such, because I read the book first, and he's such great casting for that role. Like better than I even could have imagined. He's perfect in that role. Great pick.
Yeah, really. Him and Tyler Perry's chemistry is very funny, that movie too. It's short, there's not a ton of it, but I do love their back and forth. Clemmer, you have 9.
Okay, I'll throw another Affleck up there. Movie came out as my Instacart order comes by. Sorry. Mel, stop. You can keep that in or not. I can start again. We'll start. I got another. I'll throw Affleck. No, stop. Okay.
Now we got to keep it in.
Now I got to keep it in. No, it's just the Instacart. There we go. Okay. Ben Affleck in Way Back. Movie came out right around the pandemic. Didn't get enough attention. And he's really good in it. Like he carries that movie. I think he should have got a nomination. 2020, a famously really weak year in movies. It's crazy he didn't get more love for that movie. I thought he was really good in it.
Yeah, it's a movie that kind of got lost in the shuffle of the madness of like the post-COVID era, COVID era movies too. Because he was very good. He was like the main reason why I think that movie worked. And like the best thing you say of the movie is probably that. But yeah, I would agree. I think it's a good pick. I'm glad that kind of snuck in there. Last pick goes to Ken Jacks. Right now we have 1, 2, 3, 4 Affleck, 6 Damon. 5 Damon. What's the last one? Tie game, or does Matt take it?
I'm stuck between a few. I think there's one where I don't know if it's fair to do this, but I think the behind the scenes of it makes it more impressive to me. So I think he's not like the main star of the movie. Like it's fuck it. I mean, Saving Private Ryan. I think Damon in Saving Private Ryan, the whole scene he has with Tom Hanks, where he describes, which is all made up. Matt Damon made that whole entire sequence up where he talks about like his brothers and their story, and like he's like reliving this memory, and you feel like you're living the memory with him. And then he just like breaks down at the end of it. He's like, "That's the last time I saw them." Like, and like he all kind of hits him. Man, dude, that's brutal. It was really good acting, and the fact that he improvised it makes it 10 times better to me. So I think I'll go with that. As short lived as a experience it was with him, he's only really in the last like what, half hour. Man, he's good. He's really crushed that role.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
You have to make it care, because the whole movie you're trying to find this guy, you have to make it pay off. It has to be worth that trip. And he does it. That was next on my list, Kendrick.
Oh, and then earn this at the end of it. Not that that's him, but like when it transitions from him to the old man, and that's not him either, obviously. But when he's like, "Tell me I lived a good life." Oh, it hits you. It hits you hard.
Yeah, that's a good one. So Matt Damon, Good Will Hunting. Ben Affleck, Good Will Hunting. Matt Damon, The Martian. Matt Damon, Departed. Matt Damon, Talented Mr. Ripley. Matt Damon, Oppenheimer. Ben Affleck, The Town. Ben Affleck, Gone Girl. Ben Affleck, The Way Back. Matt Damon, Saving Private Ryan. So 6-4 in favor of Damon there.
All right.
I'd Argo on there. The Informant, Matt Damon. Obviously, I love Ocean's 11, Linus Call. I think probably it's a little lost in the shuffle, but I think Damon's great as Linus in that. And then Jason Bourne, baby. Fucking Bourne, yeah. Man.
Probably
the movies towards Rounders. The end not being as good, but he's great as Bourne.
Rounders. And then I had The Rainmaker on my list. He's really good in that movie.
Stillwater was awesome. That we actually talked about that in the interview, but like he was really good in Stillwater. That movie didn't get a lot of love, but he was awesome in that.
Also great in I Wish I Had Gotten Another Pick, because I'll tell you what, the Adjustment Bureau would have been sneaking in for Damon. That's a man fighting against God. That's come on.
Rounders deserves more love though. That wasn't a legitimately very good performance in that.
Yes. So I don't have the fans' performances ranked, but do you all want to hear their top 10 Damon Affleck movies?
Yeah.
Okay. So a couple of these, I'll take out Dazed and Confused because I don't really think that counts for, I mean, Affleck's in it for 2 seconds. So we'll start with Ford v Ferrari, 10. Then Argo.
Ooh.
Then The Martian. Then The Town. Then Gone Girl. Ocean's 11. Saving Private Ryan. Good Will Hunting. Oppenheimer. And then number 1, The Departed.
I believe that.
That's a great list.
Yeah, that's very good.
When Argo is like 9 or whatever, and like it's not that out of place, I think Argo is a great movie. That's a fucking great list.
Yeah.
Great filmography.
That's crazy.
I will say when you split their filmographies, one filmography is a lot better than the other.
Yeah, but Affleck still had a great career. And attacking the directing stuff.
That's the big thing.
Like I just saw Gone Baby Gone like last week, and it was so good. Dude. It holds up so well.
We'll need to do a actors turned directors ranking at some point.
For sure. Yeah. That's a good one. Yep.
Hey, y'all. It's Gooch. Congratulations on making it this far into Project Big Screen episode 15. You just heard our fan rankings of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck movies. Absolutely crushed it. And if you're not a part of the fan rankings, don't worry. I'm going to tell you how to join right now. All it is a follow from us on Letterboxd. So what I need you to do is in the comments below, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, answer this question. What is your favorite buddy cop movie of all time? I'm doing this one in honor of The Rip. So comment your answer below with your Letterboxd handle, and I will follow you from our Project Big Screen account, and then you're going to be in our fan rankings. It's that easy. Once again, thank you all so much for the support you've shown us so far. Now back.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Back to the show.
All right, next week we'll be Mercy, the Chris Pratt movie with is Rebecca Ferguson in that? Am I making that up?
The judge.
Yeah. Dead Man's Wire. I think we'll talk about if people are able to see it, and then Testament of Anne Lee. We'll finally talk about. And then we'll talk about snubs for the Oscars, all-time snubs. I think she's going to be a big snub.
Rebecca Hall for Mercy, you're saying is going to be a snub?
Thursday, Rebecca, Amanda Seyfried, yeah. Thursday, we will do some way, shape, or form a reaction here on this channel where you're watching. If you're listening, go to our YouTube. That's where you hear it live. Reaction to the Oscar nominations. Won't be anything too crazy. I think I'm going to drop my top 30. I delayed my top 30 to watch two more movies that I thought might make a list, and neither made it. So that was a complete waste of time. But that's okay. I've now closed the book on 2025, so I'm doing a top 30 video and breakdown. I think drop that Thursday. Going to get that cleared through our legal team that I can put some clips in there. So that'll be out. Check out Clemmer with Robbie talking Superman. The real start of it, Superman. The big time OG Superman movie. Talk about a theme that's lasted forever from John Williams. And that's it. Thank you to Matt Damon, Ben Affleck. That was awesome. Being able to have an interview with them tacked onto this show. That's it for Ken, Jack, Gooch, Clemmer, Jeff D'Lo. We'll talk to you next time.